It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Alex, and Renee are here. We'll talk about some of the rumors about new iPhones, problems with the Qualcomm radio chip. We'll also talk about the new EU rules that are going to definitely impact Apple, and a whole lot more, including a farewell. All coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 825, recorded July 5th, 2022, the Superman Building. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Certain people make my life easier by helping me out, and ZipRecruiter makes hiring easy because they do the work for you. How? Well, ZipRecruiter's technology finds great candidates, and you can invite them to apply. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak to try it for free. And by Ultimate Ears Fits. Ultimate Ears Fits are the world's most comfortable earbuds with premium sound and all-day comfort. Use the promo code MacBreak at UE.com/fits to get your pair. And by CashFly. Deliver your video on the network with the best throughput and global reach, making your content infinitely scalable. Go live in hours, not days. Learn more at CashFly.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Renee Ritchie's here, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Leo. I will try to be newsworthy and apply today for everyone.
Yeah, because it's a little bit of a slow. I say this every week. Andy Yannacco laughing at me. Yeah, you can bring me the copy. That's good. Hello, Andy.
I'm laughing in agreement because I'm looking at the show notes and I'm thinking, you know what? This is one of the weeks where I bet that a research paper that's related to a story that's only related yes. to an Apple story, we might be able to talk about yes. that this week.
I do have a story, though, that you and Renee will like. I put it in just for you.
Yes, exactly.
You saw it, I think. Much. Yes. Also, from 090.media and officehours.global, Mr.
There you go. Cheeto on the chopstick. Bandwagon.
He's using the real deal, eating his Planters cheese balls. It's Mr. Alex.
I found the chopsticks work just good. No, they're not Planters. They're not Planters. They're Pipcorn.
I don't even know what Pipcorn is.
So hipster.
I just found them. They're pretty good. These are real cheddar cheese balls, 20% less fat, real cheddar
they
cheese.
They have real cheese in them?
Not fried.
Well, wait a minute. Look on the back, though.
Heirloom corn.
See what the actual ingredients are. That's the front.
Ingredients are ground cornmeal, sunflower oil, and canola oil.
Yeah.
Cheddar cheese, organic whey, organic cheddar cheese, organic milk.
Wait a minute. Is cheddar cheese cultures, and then in parenthesis organic whey cheddar cheese, or is it cheddar cheese all by itself?
And by the way, how many D's in cheddar?
Is it a Z in the cheese? But they do that thing. They say cheddar
organic,
cheese,
organic, non-fat,
and then they put in parentheses cheese whey because that's really what's.
All I can say is there's nothing in here that I can't pronounce.
That's usually the thing. By the way, this makes them no less horrible for your health.
Exactly, but you're
so much better for your hipster.
I did it for the show. I did it for the show. There's no way I'm going to eat this whole thing.
But they also have.
I got the cheese.
They have jalapeno.
Very elaborate troll.
They have jalapeno, which are zesty. I got to tell you.
Well, if you're not going to finish those, I'll trade you whatever you don't eat for that AirPods case that I have with no AirPods in them.
Ooh.
So you can match them with your AirPods.
There you go.
There you go. I'll send you a
there
pack.
There you go.
Anyway, what I just thought. I thought we'd have some little bit of fun. They're pretty good, actually.
Delicious.
And unfortunately, I have to get rid of them quickly because I am capable of eating all of them. Like they actually are very good.
Yeah.
And
I bought, as you know, a case of them, but I brought them all here just to kill the staff.
I'm taking these to the office. I'm going to take
John,
these to the office.
John, did you have any of those Planters cheese balls?
They're horrible.
Good.
I'll have to send you some of these ones. These ones are pretty good.
That's good.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah. That's what I need. I'm afraid that the chopsticks aren't going to be long enough. There we go. I have the grabbers. It's as if we worked at a grocery store.
I got to get the right angle there.
I feel like I'm watching. Andy's got some too.
Spider-Man all of a sudden.
Andy, why do you have those?
Because I've got these high ceilings. It's the only way that I can open and close some of the curtains to reach up for them. And
we,
so
we have these for retrieving hats from my massive hat collection. It's gone so high now that you have to actually be able to reach the ceiling to grab. There you go. I got you.
You don't have a hat problem. You have a hat solution.
Oh, man. I visited my mom, as you know, Andy, because I was near you, and I was in Rhode Island over the week, and she showed me, we were looking at slides, and I realized I began the hat collection when I was like three. And I had a fez my grandma brought me from Egypt, and I had a Spanish Matador's hat. But I realized also the problem, they were all for a three-year-old head. And as big as my head is.
Never had a chance, Leo.
It wasn't
never
yet
a chance.
Fully formed. So anyway.
How was your trip?
It was very nice. And I'm sorry, Andy, we couldn't get together, but I wanted every, and I told you this in the email, every drop of time with mom, because she's 89, going to be 90 in January. And every moment is precious at this point. Plus, I was busy eating clam cakes. And
you're a little too logy to.
I couldn't move. I couldn't move, friend. You have 6 clam cakes and a Narragansett beer shandy made with Dell's lemonade, and you ain't going anywhere for the rest of the day. That's it. It's over. A 30-year-old comic book that became a Silicon Valley Bible. I've read this because of you and Renee. The Financial Times discovered Scott McCloud's understanding comics.
Yep.
And the most interesting thing in this story is apparently this has been kind of the Bible in avatar design. McCloud has given talks at Google and Pixar, Blizzard, Electronic Arts, at Bitmoji. The cartoon avatar developer in the group that owns Snapchat, Understanding Comics, is given to every newly recruited artist. This is our Bible at the studio, says Bitmoji founder Bob Blackstock. So I just thought, wow, when I saw that, because I read this because you said I needed to understand comics.
Yes.
It's a wonderful book. Yep. It is. It's a graphic novel as much as a comic book, yeah.
But it was a seminal book, like in the 80s, about, because to basically understanding the entire, just like the title says, here is the mechanics of how a comic book works, how graphic storytelling works. That's not just, hey, you start at the top left, you go from left to right and up to down, but mostly telling about, well, here is the psychological or the sociological effect of having a panel break, that it can denote the passage of time, it can denote the passage of space, and sometimes you can violate these things. But the thing that I think most of that article was talking about was, he made this one page was all about cartooning and how it plays with the brain's ability to recognize faces and to impart previous experience and previous understanding to them. He has like sort of a spectrum where it's okay, so I'm going to draw this picture of a guy, and at the very, very one edge of the strip, it's just like a smiley face. It could be anybody. At the other end, it's a drawing that's almost photorealistic, and then he does every sort of transition in between of adding more realism as he goes, and making the point that the photorealistic image can only be this one person. The person that at the other end is so vague, it could be anybody. But in the middle, there's kind of a magic where you recognize a face that might be similar to somebody that you know or a relative or something. And without you even knowing it, you start to impart your own affection, your own understanding to them. It's the reason why cartoon heads or like a Bugs Bunny or Usagi Yojimbo, it's an animal head of a character that's kind of acting like a human, but you recognize something from your own experiences of interacting with people in that, and that makes it more real. So yeah, it's key to trying to figure out at what point do we have, when you're trying to make an avatar, when you're trying to create a simulacrum of another human being in virtual reality or augmented reality, how far do you have to go in order to make that emotional connection to that person you're talking to versus being so realistic that if you're one degree shy of the mark, it becomes creepy?
It does explain why Bitmojis and Memojis, Apple's version, never can look just like me, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of softened version of you, right?
Well, and we give it a lot of room when we don't try to hit it right on. So for instance, if you look at MetaHuman, which is actually mentioned in this article, We've done events where we've done projects where we've used MetaHuman and we've given it facial capture and had it do all the things we need to do, and you just never feel like you can get there. And you have the exact same data, and you put it on a Meta, you know, like a Memoji or something like that, and it looks totally fine. You know, and it's just that we have...
Is that the uncanny valley? Is that the issue?
Yeah, it's the uncanny valley. And basically, as soon as you get close to a realism, our brain immediately goes, okay, is it real?
Something's wrong with that thing.
And it immediately gets really critical really quickly because we're used to looking at that much data. Whereas when we back away a little bit, we can make, we give it room, because we know it's not real. And so we don't expect it to be real. And then we're just, our brain will start, as Andy said, we'll start filling in all the other data that we need to make it enjoyable. But we add that to it, and it doesn't have to add. In the same way, people say sometimes it's better to read the book than to see the movie. Like, the movie creates a visual of something that a lot of us imagined some way very different than what we see, and then that realism kind of takes it away. You know, I was watching Song Exploder over the weekend with Nine Inch Nails, talking about Hurt, you know, with Trent Reznor, and someone asked, like, what does it mean? And he's like, I can't tell you that, because people have a meaning for that song, or they have a meaning for songs.
And he goes, music and lyrics are especially that way, right? They're very personal.
And he says, I don't want to, you know, you don't need to know
they're abstract.
You don't need to know what that was about. It's what's important is what it's about for you. You know, and so it was really interesting.
It's amazing. I'm sure that McLeod is very happy that his 30-year-old book, which is still in print, by the way, is getting the attention from Financial Times. Yeah. That's crazy. Here's a quote from Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons. If you've ever felt bad about wasting your life reading comics, check out Scott McLeod's classic book immediately. You might still feel you've wasted your life, but you'll know why. And you'll be proud.
Yeah. No, it's he is really the king of academic cartoonists. That sounds like it's put down.
Well, that really sounds bad. Yeah,
but really changing. No, but when you think about it, it's
Spiegelman when Google, and people like that who really Will Eisner.
Right. Yeah. But again, making people understand. But what's really interesting is that, like, when Google released the Chrome browser for the first time, they hired Scott McLeod to basically write a graphic novel.
Wow.
To explain why here's every technology that goes into a browser, here's why things fail and things go well, here's why Chrome is supposed to do something better. They did another recent one that I haven't seen yet with Lucy Bellwood, one of my favorite cartoonists, also, I think, also teaming up with Scott McLeod. But I would be amazed to see, like, what Apple would do to say, here's something we want to explain. We want to explain our version of augmented reality and security and privacy. Why don't we hire Lucy Bellwood to explain it for us? We'll work with her and basically create an AR comic.
Here's the
to really show us through
the original 2008 Google Chrome comic. As excited as we are about building Google Chrome, it's important to help all browsers become more powerful. Human brain, thumbs up, thumbs down. This is hysterical. I love this. And that's just one page.
For WWDC one year, when they changed the App Store rules, they got a comic book made and given to every developer that explained the new App Store policies.
An old man like me is going to just say, well, that's because kids can't read. They need comic books, right?
Developers.
Here's another quote that'll... I tie it back to Apple. Andy Hertzfeld, one of the creators of the Mac, one of the most insightful books about designing graphic user interfaces ever written, even though it never discusses the subject directly.
Yeah.
It's about user interface. Quite interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just, hey, here's how to read a comic book. It really is, here's how the human brain processes visual language. Here's how here's how we process identity. And it's like, my God, I had no idea that there was such that the comic books were essentially doing a whole bunch of, like, 0-day hacks on my brain to be effective, to make me connect to these characters.
Yeah, really cool. Anyway, I threw that in for you guys.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
Make you feel at home.
Yay.
I don't know how much credence to give this. A tweet from Pierre Blazquez. Do you know Pierre Blazquez, René? He's got a French name.
I don't think anybody knows Pierre.
Nobody knows Pierre Blazquez. He's a developer who says, and he won't say where.
His family knows him.
Yeah, his family. Mom and dad remember Pierre, I hope. Yeah.
He's like Chef. Nobody understands him, but
I just don't want to be mean. He's not an established leaker that we have a veracity score for yet.
So he claims, even though he won't show anybody where, which is a little weird, that there's publicly downloadable source code repositories that contain mentions of three as yet unreleased Apple devices, a Mac 14.5, 6, and 8. Renee, is that what is that credible? What is that?
I mean, anything is credible. Usually it's more specific. It's like MacBook Pro 4.8 or Mac Pro, or, you know, it's an actual name of the Mac, not just a generic Mac. And if they're going to hide the actual name, why wouldn't they just hide the whole string? I remember once Apple was having fun with Mark Gurman because he was getting good at finding those strings, and they put like iProd 1, hamburger or something in the strings just for like a couple releases.
Take that, so, Stephen Trout Smith.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
<funny. laughs>
Or just they put Easter a bunch egg. Of ludicrous numbers in there.
Yeah. Blazquez also says he found code names and identifiers for more than 20 further new variants of the device, including for the iPhone 14, iPhone 15, 2, 3, 4, and 5. What are you going to do with that? Nothing. We know new stuff is coming. But that does bring me to the question, Renee. Where the hell is my M2 MacBook Air?
Mac Rumors found a retail source that said, I think they said July 15th. Which makes the kind of sense that does. I mean, I usually assume Apple's going to go the last day of the month. Whenever they say July, it means July 31st at, you know, 11:59 p.m.
It could be as
but
late
Mac
as.
Mac Rumors says, yeah, they have a retail source, yeah, that says July 15th, and that tracks for me.
Is it supply chain issues? Is it, what's going, why, what, why? I've never,
yeah,
I don't remember
I think
Apple
it's just,
ever doing this.
They do something like, they often, the Macs are available like the same week, like the way the MacBook Pro was. But I think like the 2020s are basically the Book of Boba Fett of decades, Leo. Just nothing went right. We can't get anything to track on the same timeline. Everything is like, when is it going to be available? There's still a huge, huge backlog on legacy nodes, which are all those little extra chips that have to go everywhere. So I think they're just trying to ship as many as they can as fast as they can.
Well, and you may want to wait because according to iMore, there's some real problems with the M2 MacBook Pro.
No, that's all garbage.
It's garbage.
I'm so upset about that whole. Every time a Mac product comes out, there's these cooked up cockamamie catastrophized conspiracy theories now, and it's getting to the point where I don't even want to cover this stuff anymore. It's like this is Max Tech, which is like, I like the Max Tech channel. They're great, but they got a lot of views off running a bunch of benchmarks, and then they even admitted it on Twitter 2 days ago that they plan out how the Mac fails videos before even released because they get a lot of views.
It's good for views. This is why YouTube. Yeah. And you're a good YouTuber, but you're the what did they call that?
Exception.
The exception that proves the rule.
So there's a huge Twitter fight today about this where one of the Apple YouTubers is saying, I cannot reproduce your results. And they're saying, well, we ran the Rosetta version of this benchmark at the same time as that benchmark. And they're like, but then you're deliberately setting it up. So, Leo, the thing is, like, I could make any MacBook fail. I know exactly how to hurt them. I know exactly which tests they do well and they do badly. And the ways that I can hurt them are not a ways that almost any, like maybe 0.1% of customers will ever accidentally come across. It's just that when you get, like, the whole crux of this one is if you light up every CPU, you're fine. But if you light up every CPU and every GPU for a long period of time, it's going to ramp down. And that's exactly expected behavior. Apple said last year with the M1 that with the MacBook Pro, because it has an active cooling system, it can sustain longer than the Air, which is fanless, but it's not forever. You have to go to the Mac Mini if you wanted something big and bulky enough with a big enough fan to sustain indefinitely, and that's certainly not the MacBook Pro. So this, if you light the CPUs, you're fine. Like, it'll just persist with the CPUs. If you then light up every one of those new GPU cores, it'll go for as long as it can, and then it'll ramp down temperature.
Which is the same thing that they were saying with the i9 16-inch MacBook Pro, right?
Yeah.
I mean, remember they had to put it in the fridge and all, or the freezer.
But so, his temperatures are so high that there is nothing. And I've asked
108 degrees Celsius.
Nobody can even imagine that it just doesn't pull that much power. Like, the whole computer doesn't pull that much power. So,
well,
and that's the problem with the data sets of one.
They took this picture very quickly because he even says it immediately throttled down and cooled off. He also says that the heat affects the SSDs. is that more of the same? That
heat affects everything. Like heat affects almost any component. Like heat affects the batteries as well. But like the thing is, like this is why I'm so upset that Future has defunded Enantec, because Enantec did this right. And when you benchmark right, like you have a bunch of units, you do a bunch of tests. It's at a controlled temperature. It's at like you have all the wireless stuff off, because wireless can make a huge impact on tests, just because radios, they go up and down. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff you have to do to make normalized benchmark. Linus wants to do this with his lab. Bless his heart. Maybe he can do it, but it's just
we need these reliable high integrity sources to do this, who do it right,
because IDG shut down their lab, PC Mag shut down, like every other lab has been shut down as far as
Patrick Norton was the guy, he was the tester at CD Labs, and he's always told me, Leo, benchmarks are hard.
They are so hard, and people don't, especially now, because an SoC isn't like the like
it's
just an Intel chip. It's got E cores, P cores, G cores, like neural engine cores. It's really complicated.
He also, MaxTech also says this is not a problem they saw with the last generation MacBook Pro. So,
and it's like, and we, because he got one test unit and he did one very fast video, and that's again, that's one of the problems. It's not a big enough data set.
Good. Thank you. I knew we could count on you.
The problem for me is that like all these people watch that video and then come into my comments and they are so toxic and so angry and so rage baited, and I answer as many as I can because I genuinely feel bad, because it's bad for rage baiting people is bad for them. It's bad for customers. It's bad for everything. But there's just like there's so many of them now. I just can't keep up.
Well, kids, I guess the advice we would give to our audience is you got to consider the source. Don't believe everything you read. And we need a new Enantec, I guess. Are you saying that because Future is not giving them money, that Enantec themselves are not as reliable or not as they don't?
Well, no,
do
they
it.
Just lost everybody.
They just don't
everybody
do it.
Left.
Yeah, everybody.
Ryan's
left.
The only one left, and he has a part-time writer. They've gone to Intel or Apple, and some of them have gone independent. And it's just like the best advice I can give is the advice we always give, and that is if you buy a new Mac, put it through everything you're going to do. Put it through the hardest things you're going to do. And if you have any problems, take it back. But like do your workload, because your workload is not a bunch of download, run and done apps that people get off the internet and barely look at.
But is there any moral that our audience can take? Should they perhaps wait for a better cooled M2?
This is such a weird product, Leo. Like, this product is for such a... Like, this product is basically for people who are going to buy the M1 MacBook Pro, and now they can get it with an M2.
Yeah, because I don't want a touch bar. This is the old MacBook Pro.
Yeah, it's like for enterprise purchasers who buy, like, 2,000 of them and then just give them to their workers.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone else should get, like, the M1 Pro or the MacBook Air.
There's good M1 stuff, and there's not such an improvement in M2, especially in these old designs that you would really...
I am super happy. Like the weird thing is, like, for years people complained that Apple wasn't spec bumping things, and I want them to. I want them to spec bump whenever they can, because if you decide, like, if this is the perfect Mac for you, you deserve it with the latest chip. There's no reason you should have an 18-month-old chip when you buy it. You get the latest chip, so it's great.
Yeah.
It's just not for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying.
Sorry, I'll stop yelling today.
Hey, you're a YouTuber. You got to yell. In fact, give us a real good YouTube expression.
Hey, what is up, guys?
No. Like,
oh,
you know,
for like, this, I don't know, Leo. I can't do the,
you know, like
the performative cynical rage theater.
I was giving you the expression, like.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Now you put that in the thumbnail. Your money, baby. Your money. I noticed you stopped kind of doing that.
Yeah.
I applaud you, sir. I applaud you. This will be the new thing. Avoid YouTube tech videos where somebody's going some strange
I get
expression.
It. Like, magazines have like people on them with like often up, like a famous celebrity with like some sexy thing on it, because that's what people buy.
It's
hacking our brain.
We're humans. Yeah. We're animals. Yeah. We're easily fooled. What's a magazine, Renee? What is that?
I don't. It's that thing you get in PDF.
I'm curious. I was thinking about this over the weekend. Who reads magazines now? I mean, and what I mean
you
by
used
that
to,
is
I remember going to the airport with you, Mr. Alex Lindsay. You'd go to the airport shop. You'd come back with a stack a foot high.
Read them
the
on the
Economist.
Flight.
You'd read them all on the flight.
Yeah. And I don't, because I'm like, well, I have my phone, and then I have these magazines on the phone, but I don't actually like reading them on the phone. Like, and then I find myself like not like it's an, I've noticed that I, because they're available electronically, I try to download them electronically, but I don't actually read them electronically. And
oh,
I just kind of want them to be, you know, like, no, but it's like a weird, like, I've just noticed this thing about that. I, because as you know, as you just stated, I used to read a lot of magazines and now I mostly listen to them, you know, like if they don't have an audio portion.
Do you use AudM? What do you use to listen to them?
I listen, most of them I listen through their own app, ironically.
Oh, app.
You know,
yeah.
So I listen to, the two that I listen to probably the most are The Economist and Foreign Affairs. And so those are my two, like, things that I listen to while I'm not doing this. And so those both have their own, The Economist is great because they do it every, I hate the little music things that they do, but they, otherwise they, I mean, I just want them to say, the Foreign Affairs does it better because they just do the thing, right?
Yeah.
But the, so Economist, if you listen to the entire Economist in audio, the audio, the music hits drive you crazy. The problem with the Foreign Affairs is that they are a month behind.
So they publish the thing
and then they you don't get, well, it's very evergreen. I mean, you can listen to the Foreign Affairs for like 6 months ago and it's just talking about things.
Yeah,
you know?
So I guess that's true.
But,
yeah.
But Economist, though, so those are the two that I probably listen to the most. And then Apple has a ton of stuff that they've been adding.
Oh.
In fact, in Foreign Affairs, you'll hear stuff paid for by Apple.
Oh.
You know, this was provided by Apple Audio or whatever, and other ones are paid for by NOAA, which I don't know what that is. Anyway, so the news on air, I think, is what it is. Anyway, news on audio. Anyway, so. So I find myself listening to a lot of them, which I like. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, so that's easy.
It's funny because you don't have a commute, so you're just doing this around the house in your slippers. Why? You slide around and listen to Foreign Affairs.
To clean the pool filter is about 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
So
yes.
I listen to everything at about 1.75. So
is this the Foreign Affairs magazine app?
Yeah.
It has audio.
It has audio, but it's a horror. Like, someone really needs to go back and redesign it. It's the dumbest. I mean, it took me a little while to figure out, like, the science. I've been reading Foreign Affairs since I was like 12. So I like it. Like, my parents got it, and I just grew up reading it. So I couldn't understand until I was about this age why all the text was so big. Like, I was like,
it's for
like,
old kid, people, like, Alex.
It was so funny. As a kid, I was like, like made for 5 year olds. Oh, no, I was like, this is made for 5 year olds. Oh, like, why are they making the text for 5 year olds? And now that I'm
now
over 50,
appreciate.
I go, oh,
yeah. In fact, now you've switched to audio because it's so, the text.
too much.
I want to recommend. I don't. You're probably familiar with it, but I really like AudM. AUDM. It's an app for iOS that has The Atlantic, ProPublica, The New. It's all liberal stuff. Vanity Fair, New York, New Yorker, Wired's in it.
And do
New
they
York
do all the articles?
I don't think they do all, but they do some. I guess they do so many. I don't ever say, oh wow, I wish they had more.
Right.
And they do real narrators. It's not auto generated or anything like that. So,
well, that's both for the Foreign Affairs and Economist. It's real. And then the Apple ones that you see in Apple News. Wow, that is some great production. Like, they, you know, they definitely.
What is the story there? Because Apple, we were talking about this on Sunday. Glenn Fleischman was on, and he said, "Yeah, Apple hired up a bunch of people. A lot of people we know, like Serenity Caldwell." During the kind of Great Depression for online publications, there were a lot of people looking for work, and Apple hired a lot of them. But I remember they hired Nathan Olivares Giles away from us, and then they just seem, Serenity hasn't because of WWDC, but she only seems to emerge once a year. It seems like they're
well, it takes
elves.
Her a year to make each one, Leo.
Yeah, maybe. No, they're making them day in, day out. So where are all these people going? I mean, what's happening?
She does the tech talks, too, though. So, like, she does, like, all the tech talks you see during the year.
So
the
maybe it does take a year to do that, yeah.
Yeah, it's all developed.
So Apple News is where they are? I mean, where are all these content people
mostly
going?
I know a lot of people that are in Apple News right now. Apple News, because there's a lot of curation. There's a lot of people who are working in the App Store who write those articles about, hey, here's...
That's what Glenn said. Here,
apps that... There's also a bunch of people who are just in the developer stuff that are basically writing documentation, editing documentation, that sort of stuff.
And Apple News has audio in the app.
Yeah, they do.
Oh yeah, Apple News audio stories, the stories you need to hear everywhere you want to listen. Oh, this is cool. It's funny. I subscribe to it because I have Apple One, but I I've never listened. I'll have to.
I realize there's a lot of magazines that, you know, Apple's doing more where you see more articles from different places that are in audio.
Right.
But I was like, if they just took on the whole, like the reason that I like it is because what frustrates me is to go to an article. If you start providing audio, the problem is then I get into a habit of, oh, I can listen to this, you know, while I'm cleaning or doing whatever I'm doing. And suddenly, if I don't have that article that I want to read, I don't want to read it anymore. Like, that's what I noticed is that if once I have the easier way to absorb the information, I don't want the old one anymore. And I just get frustrated and I stop reading it. You know, like, it's not
so
like I go, oh, I'm going to
say that out
to
loud because publications are going to go, well, we better not make audio versions of our stuff.
Well, I just think that you know, we have been, there's been a bunch of us that have been talking about the fact that we would have listened to magazines for the last three decades. You know, I spent, it was funny, the first conversation where I really got into that was I was talking to my uncle who spends a lot of time on a tractor, you know, plowing fields. And he's like, man, I wish all the farm magazines were in audio. And we actually tried to work on a business plan like 30 years ago because it was just like, that would be great.
Sure. You live in a combine during harvest season, right?
You just there's all these things, there's all this downtime that you want to fill with, some people want to fill with information. And so, especially when you're doing something that's frustrating, like cleaning your pool, you know, like it's nice to be at least feeling like something.
I listen to audiobooks when I'm gaming because then I don't feel like I'm throwing my life away.
I don't think I could do that. Although I only play one game, I don't think I can't even listen to people around me when I'm playing it.
Because
I got to make so many decisions so quickly.
I just got Portal on the Switch, which is one of the all time great games.
Yep.
The Portal Companion. $20, by the way, on the Switch, and it's really playable on the Switch. So now I have something.
Because the cake is a lie.
Yeah. The Portal is not a lie. All right, let's take
Colton's music for that. Are like high on my favorite playlists.
Oh, the first thing I did when I was downloading Portal is play Still Alive. I said,
"Yeah,
hey, you know who? Play Still Alive." Oh, I love that song.
So good. I didn't point out, Leo, that Serenity also does the Apple Developer app. So anytime that's updated, that's all her work too. Well, with her working with other people to keep it updated.
Should mention that Ian Cutress, who did leave Anand Tech, our chat room informs me, has his own YouTube channel, Tech Potato.
Yeah, it's delightful.
So is he doing the same kind of thing, or is it more, I see the expressions.
He's doing consulting and YouTube videos, so he'll like try to what's the right word? Impose some sanity upon all the...
He's got apparently an interview with the person who runs the Lanai Cat Sanctuary, as well as AMD could demolish Intel in this market. That's eclectic. Is that what we... Yeah. Look, and then he's interviewing the head of MediaTek on their Wi-Fi chip. And yeah, well, that's
like Andre,
sounds like
who
be
did
worth
the
some...
last few Apple reviews is at Qualcomm now, so he's not going to be doing the M2 review. So I don't know who will. Like, well, Ryan's great, but he has like a ton of PCs to review.
Yeah, they hired Alan Milventano and Ryan Shrout and decimated PC Perspective.
Anand went to Apple. I mean,
Anand like, went just... to Apple. Yeah, again, disappeared.
It's disappointing. I know we need to get to the commercial, but we need a lot more truly independent reviews, truly independent reporting, because a lot of the attention of these companies has moved towards YouTube, and the YouTube creators, Renee accepted. There are many YouTube creators that are under a lot of pressure to say, hey, if Apple invites me to have an exclusive interview, under these extremely limited conditions in which we are just there to promote what they announced at WWDC, no, we can't ask about labor, no, we can't ask about COVID return to work stuff, it becomes a situation in which the independent conversation becomes really, really easy for these companies to manipulate. And so there was a sort of a golden age in which a site like Anand Tech was making enough money in and of itself that it's nice if Apple is going to help them. It's nice if Google is, if Intel is going to help them out. But if not, they'll just get the chips on their own. They'll just do their own tests on their own because they just are not beholden to anybody for PR, for marketing, for accessibility.
Yeah, I'll go a
for
step
anything.
Further. Like Apple, at the very least, refuses to pay for consultants. They refuse to pay for media. They refuse to pay for any of that. Where Qualcomm, Intel, Samsung will do sponsored videos. You know, I have no reason. People put big ethical statements up there. I have no reason to doubt anything. But like, they're sponsoring the video. So
I would add, though, Renee, Apple doesn't pay because they don't have to. People are so happy to get Tim Cook talking to them. They don't have to pay.
Well, also, Apple's a direct-to-consumer company where Qualcomm and Samsung SLI, for example, aren't. Like, they just want to be seen. And nobody's... People will do a video about a Samsung phone, but they're not going to do a video about Qualcomm because nobody sees it.
That's
so Qualcomm
good
wants
point.
The attention, and they market for it.
So they have to.
They want you to know it's Samsung inside. They like, Intel wants you to know it's Intel inside.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that my eyes roll a bit whenever I see, like, even a YouTuber that I really respect say, hey, look, Qualcomm just sent me this this giant gingerbread cake in the shape of their new chip. Isn't this wacky? I'm like, okay. And look, see, here's the SoC, and here's the coprocessor that does all the... Really?
Yeah, I don't like... Yeah,
the Chinese reviews are really good. Like, if you can find them, I'll send you some. But the Chinese reviewers, they have so much stuff. They're on nobody's payroll. They're completely based, so they don't care about anything anymore. Huh. And they do the absolute best benchmarking you've ever seen, and they're just brutal. It is
so
fun. Is
it in Chinese,
though? Some are in Mandarin, funny. Some are in English. Some are like, that you can get, like, the closed captions in English. But they are so good.
They're so emotional about it. They're very upset.
Yes.
Like, what's it? Give me. We're gonna take a break.
I'll
we come back. Just give
okay.
me a couple of names so we can tell our audience. Yeah. But we can give you. I'll give you a moment to do that. I think some of this is because the air is kind of going out of the room on digital advertising, right? I mean, all of these guys are suffering because Google and Facebook just sucking the air out of the room. If you can't monetize, you can't hire a staff. You can't do this kind of journalism. It's the same thing that's been happening in newspapers for the last 5-10 years. So, oh, well, you can still watch us until they suck the air out of us. fortunately, we have a very nice set of advertisers who keep us going. Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannacco, Alex Lindsay, MacBreak Weekly will continue in just a bit. But first, a word from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Certain people make life so much easier, you know. You don't know what you'd do without them. Your partner, your friend, maybe your personal assistant. It's like if you need to grow your business, ZipRecruiter makes hiring so much easier because they do the work for you. And now you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Didn't we hire you through ZipRecruiter, John? I feel like we might have got... I know a couple of our employees, whenever we're like, oh, my God, somebody just quit. What are we going to do? Lisa will go to ZipRecruiter. Many's the time I've sat with her at breakfast. She says, we need to hire somebody. Otherwise, I'm going to have to do that job. They go to ZipRecruiter. Fill out, you know, you post once on ZipRecruiter. It goes to 100-plus job boards. And then ZipRecruiter does something kind of amazing. They find the right candidates for your job and send you a list of people, and you can invite them to apply. There's something magical about that because when you invite somebody to apply... They're flattered. They go, well, yes, I would love to apply. So you get you don't get ghosted. You get a much more engaged applicant, and you get somebody with the skills you need. Our experience has been amazing. You know, we'll post in the morning, and an hour or two later, before lunch, Lisa will start saying, I love it, because wow, this person's great. Oh, another one. Oh, we've got... It's such a good feeling. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's why ZipRecruiter is the #1 rated hiring site based on G2 ratings as of January 1st this year. The hardest thing you have to do when you're using ZipRecruiter is to remember our special URL to use ZipRecruiter for free. It's ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Now, that wasn't that hard, was it? ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Thank you, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Did you come up with some Chinese names for us?
I just put one in my... I'm trying to find his English channel. I put his Chinese channel in my Pick of the Week slot so you can find it.
Oh, okay. You don't have to make that your Pick of the Week if you don't want to. But you could, and we'll save it.
Okay, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll save it. That keeps people listening. I like that.
And I'll find the English channel by then.
Awesome. Here's iFixit's teardown. Now, here's real news. Thank you, iFixit. You know, at least they've got a business model that keeps them going. And I know Kyle Weens and company are very independent and bloody-minded, so I trust them. They call themselves, and they used to be a sponsor. I don't think maybe they still are. They call themselves the Repair Manual for the Internet. They have torn down the M2 MacBook Pro. They say it's just a recycled laptop with a new chip inside. Actually, this is not the iFixit
Were we surprised at that?
No, we knew that, right? We knew that.
Yeah.
That they took the old body and chassis and where is it here, Matt? Gosh, you know. Let's do M2.
I saw that and I was like, and did you look at the outside of it? It looked exactly like the old one.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there, there's a video. It's the A2338. Here's the video. Okay. We're pretty sure, they say, we just tore down the new M2 MacBook Pro. Not positive, but
even
pretty sure.
Stickers on it that updated the M1 to M2 on the outside.
You're
of the box.
You're kidding.
That's to be.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they got to ship right away, Leo. Got to ship.
So maybe that's why it's available so fast. Okay.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, changing the chip is one thing. Changing, like, the industrial design of a computer and the replication of it and building it out and everything else is not trivial. So it just would have delayed the whole thing by probably 6 months to a year.
Isn't the M2 bigger? I mean, you can't just slot it in, or could
you? Yeah, no. Someone tried. Luke Miani tried to change the chips. Doesn't work.
Yeah. It's a new motherboard, a new logic board?
Yeah.
But is the logic board the same dimensions as the old one?
I think.
Okay, well, that would make it easier.
It needs a bunch of other things.
Oh, yeah, here's the old one. Here's the new one. Yeah, they're very similar. Okay, I get it. In fact, they look identical. I can see the confusion. Anyway, good video, as usual, from iFixit, and I guess they'll have parts and repair. You know, you can't, we talked, you know, Micah did this thing where he got the official Apple repair and got the $149, 76-pound Pelican cases and all that. You can still go to iFixit and get the part and get, like, cheaper ways to do it, like their microwavable bolster that you use to soften the glue and things.
Yeah.
So I presume that they'll continue to offer that. I hope they will, even though Apple's now doing the more fancy way of doing it. All right, so nothing more to say, yeah. But thank you, iFixit, for doing that.
Yeah. I love the idea of them doing, like kids doing the same thing that I was doing, like with Apple IIe's,
yeah.
Where it's like, I figured out how to fix disk drives, and so like my side business was like people would bring their disk drives from home, and I would take them home. My dad would drive me to UDuit Electronics in Needham, where I'd buy like 72 VLS like dual SCSI chips, which is usually what blew out in them, and it'd be great if like they're 11, 12, 13-year-olds who have a side business, not scooping ice cream, not flipping burgers, but basically repairing iPhone 13s.
I didn't know you used to do that. That's so cute.
Andy had a side hustle. Oh, yeah. Baby Andy had a side hustle.
How old were you when you did that? 12?
11 or 12. Actually, it was even worse than that, because to also, as part of my ongoing public school policy of ingratiating myself with authority so that they would not think that, no, there's no way that Andy did that thing he was excused of, during Easter vacation stuff, like I would take like all the broken like computers home with me, and I would fix them and bring them back the next week, and it would take me maybe a day to get them running, and then for the rest of the week, my friends would come over and we'd use like these like 8 Apple IIe's on like 16 disk drives to basically pirate every game we could possibly get our hands on.
It didn't help them explain why a sixth grader had massive sideburns, but at least they didn't suspect your tech chops anymore, right?
They were paste-ons at that point. I was their transitional ones, you know. My mom wouldn't sign off on you need to get your parents' signature just like on a tattoo.
I did, by the way, Andy, I did visit the Ambrose Burnside statue in Providence, Rhode Island. It was across from my hotel, and I gave him a little salute. In your honor, I think sideburns are named after Burnside. I think.
Yep,
he was famous for his mutton chops. Yeah.
And the thing is, like to maintain my federal mutton chop license, I do have to have a horse, and that it's worth it. I mean, and she's a good horse, but you know that's commitment, man.
I stayed in the old Biltmore. You know, L.A. has a Biltmore. A number of cities had Biltmore. These in the 30s were like the fancy hotel in town. And they had these big lobbies with big chandeliers, and they'd have balls and stuff. And it's now called The Graduate. It's kind of a ghost town. I think COVID has hit it hard. We parked in the parking, their official parking garage, and it looked like there was a pathway into the hotel, and I asked the desk clerk. She said, yeah, we sold that garage a couple of years ago. You can't, and closed off the pathway. You can't go through the pathway. But it's kind of a tribute to Brown University graduates. So there's pictures on the wall in every room of Brown, famous Brown alumni in their college days, like David Byrne and Laura Linney, a bunch of people I had no idea, but I'm sure they were famous.
No, it's a, it's an interesting downtown because it's a it must have been like a beautiful downtown in the 1930s, the 1940s, but now like you have this beautiful like 1930s building, the Superman building, because
they called the Superman building
the model for the
It's the Daily Planet. I looked out my window and said, "There's the Daily Planet." Everything but the planet.
Yeah, and you can see, you actually can see it. It's the only piece of like Providence or architecture you can see in the backgrounds of Family Guy. And the thing is, like, it is vacant. It is like this massive building, and the entire thing is completely vacant because every time there's a redevelopment plan for it, there's like, here's how much it's going to cost for asbestos abatement. Here's how much it's going to be to like upgrade the plumbing, upgrade the heating and ventilation system, and everybody backs down from it. So it has to be, and it's saving. The only reason why it's still sticking around is because it's all this big, beautiful cement. It would cost so much money to tear it down.
I had no idea. So it's now completely empty?
You can occasionally see at night, you can see like a beautiful, brilliant skyline with like, and this huge building with one light on.
Oh,
and it's probably
God.
Just like one. And that's like the perennial thing, the discussion. Every 3 years is a new plan on what to do with this building and how to revitalize that area. It's very interesting because RISD is right there. It is sort of a pet project for almost everybody who's in design.
It's a great school,
right.
Yeah.
And so there are all these brilliant plans for here's what we can do to this downtown area. Because, you've been there. It's everything is right there.
It's nicer than when I was a kid. It was kind of dumpy when I was a kid. In fact, they put asphalt over the river. There's a river that goes through Providence. It made the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's widest bridge because they basically papered over the whole river in the 90s. Fortunately, they took that out. And the river's beautiful now. There's a lot of beautiful stuff. Burnside Park is very beautiful. It's a little better than when I was a kid, I guess.
Yeah, it is still a little sketchy.
It's not
a great place to hang out at night.
No,
when you walk through there, like just waiting for your bus or waiting for your train, you will smell people getting herbed up.
Yeah, there's a lot of herb. There was a lot of herbalism going.
Yeah,
I'm thinking if we can get enough members of Club Twit, we could buy this building, put the Twit logo at the top. It'd be
the Twit compound
rotating
the Twit spaceship. Yeah.
Yeah. So all it takes is your $7. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. Join today. And if 100,000 of you, no, it's going to take more than that. If 200,000 of you join, we will buy the Superman building. And
there you go.
It'll be the Twit World Headquarters. How about that? How about that? It's it was fun. Anyway, I waved at Major Burnside, Major General Burnside as I went by. How did you start, Alex, when you were a kid? What got you into tech? I know you were reading Foreign Affairs magazine, but was there any computer stuff going on there?
Yeah, my grandfather was my grandfather built a radio in 1921 to pick up the first broadcast from
KDKA.
Radio,
probably, right?
Crystal radio set, in 1921 to pick up the first commercial broadcast. It was like a World Series, I think, in 1921.
KDKA,
And he was in Signal Corps in World War II. So he was like, he ended up at West Point teaching because he was like one of the only people that knew how to do it at the time.
Oh, cool.
And so I grew up with it. When I was five, I got a Crystal radio set, and he was like, I figured this out. You better figure it out. And I learned Morse code, when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And then,
did you really?
My grandfather gave me one of the little, the little practice things.
Yeah. Practice key.
There was a, at our church, there was someone from Unisys was teaching basic, TRS-80s. He donated like 10 TRS-80s and a bunch of us sat there and learned how to do programming.
So cool.
Then my grandfather had a TRS-80. So I sat there and learned how to do that, learned how to solder from him. And it was funny because you learn how to solder. And then in the afternoon, I'd go up to the shop and we'd, learn how to weld. so it was we did a lot of both of those things. So that was it. And then I, you know, for the most part, it was just, you know, a geeky grandfather and a geeky uncle who was an engineer for MedRad, which is now part of Bayer, I think. So he taught me a lot of, you know, building stuff and fueled my interest in a lot of those things. My parents' interest in politics kept me reading all those magazines. But a lot of it was also, I was doing a lot of geeky stuff too. So it was fun.
The hard thing about being a parent is you know that things you are doing are going to imprint on your child for life, but you just don't know which things. It could be the cigarettes you smoke. It's not clear, right?
I will admit I followed my mom's thing with some restrictions. If we ever went into a bookstore and I wanted to buy a book, it didn't matter how expensive it was or big it was, she'd buy it.
Yeah.
That's
where you got that magazine habit. You must spend $100.
I did. Yeah. I would get lots of magazines. I'd put down magazines. I mean, obviously there were certain magazines I didn't even try to put down in front of my mom, but there were a lot of magazines I would just throw down. Like, I wonder if she'll buy me this magazine.
And she did.
Yeah, she'd buy it.
Yeah.
But my mom would buy you anything. Like, whether it was, I put a pipe and tobacco down one time when I was like 14 years old. She bought that too. You know, like, she was like, sure. You know, she's like, she just bought it. I was out back on the smoking this pipe, and one of my cousins was like, what are you doing? I was like, did your mom know about this? I was like, she paid for it. So anyway,
what?
And yes, she wouldn't allow us to have anything that was like sacred. Like, she didn't want anything to be kind of I got tired of it really.
Forbidden.
Because it wasn't.
No, that's.
Yeah, if it was forbidden, you'd want to do it.
Yeah, that's.
I tried it. I remember smoking it.
Yeah.
I smoked it for like a week and then I was like, oh, this is horrible.
It's
like, and
sick.
I just put it down.
Yeah.
Didn't have any.
Your mom was
didn't
smart.
Didn't have any need to do that again.
Your mom was smart. Yeah.
She had a master's in child development. So we were one big lab for her. Like, she just was constantly testing things with us.
Nice.
Is it true that your nickname and growing up was Control Group?
No, it was
Alex,
not my nickname, but it was.
What it's time to go back in the Skinner box, Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
So, was no basic your first language too, Andy?
Yeah, basic. Yeah, absolutely. And then it was. This is why making sure that the kid has a computer that he or she can actually program is such a big deal. Because I quickly got into basic, then got into assembler language when I couldn't figure out how to do some things in basic, and then came down. And I mean, I was joking about pirating games, but that was also a wonderful development.
Sure.
Part of my development, because it was that also drove part of my interest in assembly language.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, so how is it actually accessing the disk drive?
And me
then
too.
There's a beautiful,
I used
beautiful
to disassemble it so you could take out the copy protection, right? You'd have to figure out which bytes to change.
It's like, okay, so what's on track 0 sector 0? Yep. Like, let's take a look at that code, and then actually like putting my hand on the floppy drive so I could feel like what the head was doing. And
wow.
Then I remember one of the proudest moments of my life was when I cracked Dazzle Draw, because they were using this a lot of games would use like custom track layouts where it wouldn't be just going by the usual DOS layout. It would be like a custom, it wasn't a sequential thing. They were doing not just spiral tracks, but intersecting spiral tracks. And as soon as I figured that out, as soon as I finally managed to remove the copy protection on that, by the time I was like, oh, wow, I wish I were one of those kids who drank illegally, because I deserve a drink. I deserve a beer after that.
See, that's the difference between you and me. You were doing it as a kid. I was 35, so I could have a drink.
Yeah.
Like when I was young, Dad, can I have a computer? I can't afford a Univac. Sorry, son. I mean, there weren't home computers, but we did in seventh grade. Kind of like Bill Gates, his mom, they had a bake sale and they raised enough money to get a time sharing terminal at the Lakeside School. The Moses Brown, where I went in Providence, they had in a closet somewhere when I was in seventh grade a time sharing terminal to some, you know, computer, probably a Brown. But I was not at all in. It was like, that's boring. I don't want to do that. Renee, what was your first? How did you get into technology?
My father was an early IBM engineer, and he was installing train and airport computers around the world. And when we moved to Canada, he decided he didn't want to have to drive to IBM downtown every day just to use spreadsheets. So he got an Apple II Plus for us.
Moved to Canada from South Africa?
South Africa, yeah.
Wow.
From South Africa, Leo, back when
that's right.
We were still working on South Africa, yeah, for IBM South Africa.
I wish you would just do the whole show like that. Can you please?
Yeah.
I love that accent.
Yeah, so then he put that in the basement whenever he was at work. I would go down and I started off like by playing Beer Run and Wolfenstein and all of those games.
Wolfenstein.
And then I learned... And I learned how to program, and I could make like a starship fly across the screen and fire phasers. And
fun.
That
was that basic?
It was just a lot of fun.
Was that your first language?
With like 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter low res pixels, and then you have to go for the high res pixels later on.
Right. That's why we have a generation of insecure software, because this entire generation learned to program in BASIC.
Yep.
I need a go-to statement here, please.
I think it's because like the next generation after us, like everything started getting so locked down that you are now writing software using libraries that you have no idea actually how they work or what they do.
Abstracted.
Right.
Without any control over it. It's like there are things that are like. It's so complicated, you can't figure out that what I've just done that I thought was a clever solution to a problem actually is going to bring down the downfall of all humanity as soon as this connects to any other instance of this app.
Meanwhile, Woz punched out the original BASIC in paper from scraps in a cave.
Like a real programmer.
Yeah.
I really enjoy those good old days.
I'm sorry, just quickly. I've been looking at a lot of videos of people who are into vintage computing, and there are multiple projects to design brand new computers that are 6502 based, like based on the same processor, that are built with parts you can get anywhere, where everything is open source, essentially to build a modern version of like the Commodore 64. And that's not my jam. When I want to get back in touch with I want to own everything. I want to understand everything. I want to be able to modify everything. That's when I go to my Raspberry Pi. But I love the fact that there are like people my age and younger and older that are like, well, some of us are electrical engineers. Some of us are system engineers. Some of us can write a brand new kernel. And now it's possible to send out and have boards made. We'll get an FPGA and program that to simulate a video chip that we don't have anymore. I love that just like they're car nuts who are like, it's not like I want to live in the 1960s and 1970s. It's just that I enjoy a car where I know everything that works. I know how to improve everything. And at no point there's a black box where I need to have something recoded. And it tickles me that there's also that sort of thing going on in computing as well.
That's Steve Gibson. He did for a long time say, when I retire, I'm going to rewrite the PDP-8 operating system in assembly.
Yeah.
he has, by the way, I asked him a couple of weeks ago. He said, I don't think I'm going to do that after all. You know what? He got a girlfriend. That's what changed it all.
As always.
There you go. Yep, exactly.
And his girlfriend said, hey, I'm an engineer too. I know how to change the memory stack so we no longer need that separate processor.
One of the amazing things is when he interviewed a bunch of the early iOS developers and they were from Europe, the way we used to get programs in magazines, they got them over the radio and they would just record them to a cassette and then take them over to their Commodore 64 and play them right off the radio. And that's
because
blows my mind.
Listen to music in Europe, it could be
it's amazing how people
why would a radio station play the beeps and boops? That's very strange.
For geeky little
one
computer
way to
kids,
distribute
like, one day change the world.
Yeah. That's bad. It sure beats typing it in, which I think all four of us have done.
Yes. But you could type it in back then, Leo. You can't type in for me.
Oh, you couldn't do it now.
No.
Let's take a little break. We'll come back more. We actually have some Apple news. I'm as you can tell.
I'm spreading it out.
I'm stretching it out. I'm leavening
the loaf.
This is
a 9-course.
Yeah.
A 9-course meal. We're doing a little bit still, a little bites.
Exactly.
It's the chef's menu. Leo brings things out of the kitchen based on his own taste and based on how he thinks he wants the meal to go.
Whatever seasonal. Yes. Our show today, for years I've worn in-ear monitors that are custom molded. I mean, I got that habit when we were doing tech TV, and an audiologist came in, and they'd pour silicone in your ear. You'd have to hold your head like this, and they put a string in it, and you have to hold your mouth open so that you would just get a perfect impression of your ear. Then they'd pull it out, which was quite a sound, and then they would send it off to the Ultimate Ears factory where they would mold. And I still have my molded UE. I love my UEs. But that's a very expensive complicated process. Our sponsor, Ultimate Ears, has a new way of doing it that is awesome. And in fact, it is now my go-to set of earbuds, the Ultimate Ear Fits. Wouldn't it be nice? It comes in the box like this. Wouldn't it be nice if your earbuds fit like custom molded earbuds? Well, that's exactly what these are. When you open the box, they're sealed so that they have no exposure to air. There's the kind of the generic Ultimate Ears. There's the charging case, which, by the way, is like a smooth river stone. I just love the charging case. So you get the app, you get the Ultimate Ears, and then you put them in your ear. And they start to warm up. They don't get hot, but you can see them blinking like that. They warm up. And in 60 seconds, they mold themselves to your ear. They're soft silicone. They're actually, more comfortable than my hard plastic Ultimate Ears. Because they fit perfectly, the sound is better. You know, the better the fit, the better the bass and all that. Perfect fit. They stay put. You could shake your head like crazy, but they're ultra comfortable. I wear them, for instance, we had a long plane flight, wore them the whole way. You don't even notice. You can use them. By the way, they have a microphone in them, so you can use them to answer calls as well as listen to music. They work great with the iPhone. They work great with any device using Bluetooth. And this groundbreaking light form technology means they fit and they're comfortable. And here's the third reason you want to do this. No one else can wear them. They're just for you. They're just for you. Put them in, connect to the app, watch the purple LEDs form the earbuds to your unique shape. 8 hours of continuous playback on a single charge. Easily got coast to coast without a problem. Up to 20 hours with the charging case. So you just put them in the case, charge them back up. They're perfect for listening to your podcasts like this one or your favorite music to make your conference calls. Ultimate Ears has been doing this for a very long time. In fact, chances are when you see a pro musician wearing earbuds, they're wearing Ultimate Ears. They've been doing it over 25 years. And they make sure, and this is, you know, every earbud has a different feeling and different sound, so you should try these, but they make sure to give you a full, warm sound. They've got a nice, punchy low end. And because the seal is good, the low end is superb. And, of course, you can EQ it in the app. Play and pause music, answer calls. They've got built-in controls. Just tap the ears. You can use the free app to set custom actions so you can have your personal voice assistant, whichever one you like, activate. You can adjust the volume, next track, all of that stuff. And here's an important thing, because I think some people are going to say, well, yeah, but now if it's molded to my ear, can I return them? Yes. 30-day money-back guarantee. So there's absolutely no risk. Plus, you get free shipping, free returns, a one-year warranty. Visit ue.com/fits. And I want you to use the promo code MacBreak, just to let them know you saw it here. Ultimate Ear stands for sales of a variety of earbuds, so you want the fits. Well, actually, they're all good, but I've been wearing Ultimate Ears for decades. But ue.com/fits, promo code is MacBreak. ue.com/fits. Thank you, Ultimate Ears, for making these available to everybody. Everybody deserves custom molded earpieces. It's the only way to travel. ue.com/fits.
It's mine.
Oh,
you can't use them because they're molded to me. I paid for them. Like, I bought them, and I'm super happy with them.
Aren't
use
they great?
Them all the
yeah.
time. All yeah. the time.
And you got they black. Really, I didn't know that they had black. I got white, so that's nice. Those
are
pretty.
I got black ones. Yeah. Yeah. A couple of us bought them on office hours, and we did like a little unboxing, put them in there.
Oh, fun. It warms up. It's a little, they're warm, cool. But it's not hot. It's not uncomfortable.
No, just warm. Yeah. And it's absolutely correct. Like, once you have it fit, it just feels like it's part of your ear at that point when you push it in. But it is much more comfortable than the other fitted ones I've had in the past.
Oh, my gosh. These are, when I first got these years ago, I said, these are hard plastic. They're not soft rubber. Yeah. No, they're hard. So you got to get used to going, eh.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you get used to it, it's okay. But it is not as comfortable as the
these are really good.
Yeah, I love them. Thank you for that unsolicited plug, Alex Lindsay. Okay, Mr. Debunker Renee Ritchie, time to debunk another one.
All right, let's go.
Rumors, Apple forced to cut iPhone 14 orders by 10% despite anticipating strong demand. This is a DigiTimes piece. They're right there at the...
randomly accurate.
Randomly accurate at the tip of the funnel for the hardware.
Yeah.
TSMC is apparently having some difficulty with the 3-nanometer process. We kind of figured that since the iPhone, we think the rumor is iPhone 14, only the Pro versions will have the new chip. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's the current rumor. It's understood, according to DigiTimes, this is the quote, that the mass production of Apple's iPhone 14 series has started. I guess it would, right, by now. But the target shipment of the first wave of 90 million units has been reduced by 10%. Ming-Chi Kuo said demand for the iPhone 14 in China will be stronger than the iPhone 13.
The scalpers are putting down deposits, Leo. Can you believe that? The scalpers are putting down deposits. That's what he said. That's what Kuo said.
Wow. Okay. What makes one iPhone more popular than its predecessor? Is it a better camera? Is it...
It depends. Like, sometimes there's a super cycle. Like, iPhone 6 was the first big and bigger iPhone. And what that does is it doesn't necessarily get you more customers, but it brings people who might not have upgraded till the next year or the year after forward, which is why iPhone 6S didn't do as well, because everybody who was going to buy a new iPhone bought a new iPhone 6. So a lot of stuff moves. Like, it depends on the features. It depends when contracts roll over, how long people have had it. So they tend to go up and down, how big the change is, how consumer-friendly the change is. Like, people like long battery life. They like better cameras. They don't care about a lot of the nerdy stuff that we spend most of our time, you know, debating endlessly, like refresh rates and things like that.
Guo Ming-Chi, as you say it, does say he thinks that DigiTimes report is false. He disagrees.
Yeah,
so.
They're arguing a lot. It's interesting. Like Tim Cook has said before, that it's hard. Like he wouldn't recommend that people put too much faith in any one single data point, because Apple deals with a multitude of suppliers across a multitude of different plans. It does seem like it's harder this year. Like the interesting thing about the chipset, basically last year there were two chips. There was the A15 that went into the iPhone 13, and the A15 Pro that went into the iPhone 13 Pro. And that was the one with the extra GPU core. It was a little bit different. It did the ProRes encode decode. So it was a different chip. Apple just called them by the same name. And so this year, it sounds like they're going to put that chip, the A15 Plus chip or Pro chip, into the regular iPhone. So it's going to get a really good boost. It's going to get a whole extra GPU core. It's going to get those ProRes engines. It's going to have better performance.
It's still 5-nanometer, though, right?
Chip.
TSMC's having trouble with 3-nanometer.
Second generation.
Okay.
There's also an N4, so which is really just a third version. Like the they're just marketing names. They haven't actually meant the size in a very long time. And different companies, like Samsung's 5-nanometer process, is completely different than TSMC's, including the size of the die. So they don't really mean anything. It's just like the generation of the process. So right now they're on N4, which is supposed to be the third generation of N5, and trying to get to N3, which isn't really 3 nanometers, but it is a process shrink that should give them 20%. The whole thing is so complicated, Leo. But the bottom line is that they need the process to be mature enough and the yield high enough to be able to produce at Apple volume, which is the highest volume in the world. They make
90 million phones.
Else.
Yeah. Jeez Louise.
That's why they get it first, because nobody else can prepay for 90 million phones plus the Macs plus the iPads. It's ridiculous numbers. And TSMC is finally feeling a little bit of pain. There were another report today that some of the chemicals that they use have doubled in price. And Apple, you know, is very loath to raise the entry-level prices of a high-end iPhone. So is TSMC going to eat that? Is Apple going to eat that? Are they going to pass it along?
And I, you know, knowing Tim Cook, I bet you Apple's contract, you know, has a specific price in it and delivery date, and it's done. I'm sure it's been done for months, if not years. So. Yeah. You're right, TSMC.
But
I think
you
TSMC
can't get the components from the other companies. Yeah,
right.
It's hard.
Yeah. There was another rumor battle, going on this week over the 5G modem chip. Initial reports said Apple was having technical issues and had to continue to put the Qualcomm chip in their phones. Later reports have said, no, it's not technical, it's legal.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so it's so confusing, because Qualcomm, I don't think the decision should have gone the way that they did. Qualcomm contributes all these technologies towards the standard, and in return for having their technologies used and not somebody else's, they're supposed to make those technologies available, you know, at freely available at reasonable and non-discriminatory pricing.
Friend.
And Qualcomm is known to request a percentage of the retail price of a device, which if any other component maker did that, there would not be enough room for it. Like, there would just not be a product. Like, if the camera, if Qualcomm says we want 10% and Sony says we want 10% for the camera, somebody else says we want 10% for the memory module, there's just not enough percentage. But Qualcomm has won every one of these decisions up to the Supreme Court, so they have all the leverage in the world. Qualcomm is also a huge patent company. They're not just a chipset company. They make a ton of money off their patents. And Apple has licensed those patents, so basically they can produce stuff, their own stuff, using Qualcomm's technologies, but that license is for a limited amount of time, and if they're having trouble renewing it or they're arguing over the pricing of it, that could put a serious dent in Apple's ability to put a 5G chipset into the wild.
9 to 5 Mac had a soap opera-like guide to these troubles. The relationship between Apple and Qualcomm has been a fraught one. In particular, the iPhone maker was upset that Qualcomm was double dipping by selling the company a chip and then demanding a patent royalty fee for use of the chip. Things got messy at Qualcomm, accused Apple of blackmail. The CEO of the two companies had hostile meetings. Qualcomm refused to sell chips to Apple for the iPhone XS and XR. Both companies set aside earlier talk of settlement and pledged to fight it all the way. A multi-billion dollar trial began. What's the bottom line on this long drama?
Basically, the bottom line is Apple's really not...
Go ahead,
Apple's
Alex.
Losing.
Apple's
like,
losing.
Apple's not. Yeah. They're not. You know, and I have to admit that I don't understand how you can sell someone a chip and then license it, the use of the chip either.
It should be in the price.
Evidently,
obviously.
The courts. Yeah. Yeah. The courts seem to be to think that it's there. So I mean, you know, it's gone through enough court tests that I have a tendency to think that it's tested at this point. It's going to be hard for Apple to probably get around.
The patent kings, yep. Patently Apple and Foss Patents, say that the issue is that Apple could not use its own 5G chips because that would infringe two Qualcomm patents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Foss Patents has a really good piece on this, and basically underscoring that the Supreme Court doesn't want to have anything to do with this case. The Department of Justice wants nothing to do with this case. That really put the writing on the wall that any challenge that Apple wanted to have to simply say any decision that they would make to create their own 5G chip would almost certainly invalidate the two patents that are in question. And there's almost no way around it and almost no way that they could possibly appeal a decision. Although the Foss Patents article, and going into better detail than I could possibly summarize, is saying that part of it is that Apple might have had had bad strategy going in on how they were going to start to pursue Qualcomm against this, and that it wasn't so much that the courts were saying that, Apple, you're absolutely wrong, you're stupid, you're trying to get away with something, we won't have it, go back to your hidey hole and be with your tail between your legs and be punished for all these horrible things you're doing. It's more like, yeah, we're not here to hear that kind of argument, so goodbye.
Solve it yourself.
Yeah, it was basically there's nothing for us to decide here, go back home.
Yeah.
And now it's very, very clear.
Which
that
is a victory for Qualcomm, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Because especially in this environment, when the DOJ doesn't want to hear it, that's like, okay, no matter what happens in the Senate, no matter what happens in the Oval Office, nothing's going to change to help us here. We just better keep budgeting for payments to Qualcomm. And the downside of this is that you continue to get absolutely the best modem chip that you can buy in the entire world for compatibility with 5G. So, okay.
Is that true? In other words, I mean, Ming-Chi Kuo, yeah, I think, got it wrong when he said Apple is having technical issues with 5G. It wasn't.
Yeah, no, their chips are great.
Yeah.
Samsung, MediaTek, a lot of people make these chips. They just need this. They're just not as good because, the LTE chips weren't as good because they didn't have Qualcomm involved.
Right.
It's just it's so strange that these governments all around the world care so desperately about competition, except when it comes to one of the most important core technologies that exists in the world today.
Yeah.
So what does the future hold? Apple's agreement with Qualcomm ends in a couple of years. But that doesn't mean they can use the technology. They got to license it, Apple.
They better invent 6G fast.
Yeah, there you go.
It's kind of a race between licensing agreements expiring and the patents expiring. And so for the foreseeable future, it's just simpler just to simply keep these. Sometimes you know that organized crime is trying to get away with something, but if you want cement for this building, you may as well not fight that fight and just pay 20% extra to buy cement for your building from this one location. Yeah. And that's pretty much what Apple has to do.
I do recommend Florian Mueller's article in Fosspatz, yeah, because there is a lot of legal back and forth on this.
Yeah.
And it's... He says, at least with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, it's clear that what is a bad idea for Apple to pursue those PTAB IPRs post-settlement. But on the other hand, Apple's strategy, he says, wasn't a bad strategy. It just turns out it didn't work out in the end.
Didn't change anything.
In the end, what might have played a role here, he says, is that Apple versus Qualcomm was simply, as Qualcomm said, a poor vehicle for asking the Supreme Court to address how to apply MedImmune to portfolio licenses as a previous case. Yeah. This here had a lot to do with legal technicalities, and psychologically Apple's primary problem may have been that the federal court, the DOJ, and ultimately the Supreme Court just couldn't see a pressing and legitimate reason for which Apple kept challenging these patents.
And I think that Apple's going to have this problem. Some of the other companies are going to have a problem with a more conservative set of courts are going to be less... they're going to jump into this a lot less if they don't have to, and a lot of, they're running through a pattern now all the way to the top of the court where they just don't want to interact if they don't have to, that the court just is trying to stay out of things more than get into them. And so I think that that's going to be more of a challenge. Also, I don't think the government's there to help them because the government just had its wings clipped last week. And so I don't think the government's there to help anybody now because they have to pick their battles. Well, if I was in the FCC, I'd be pretty frustrated and saying, well, I'm not going to help any here because they've had all their nails cut off. So they're with the EPA. The EPA ruling is going to affect the FCC.
So this
a lot.
Just to be clear, this is the Supreme Court ruling that said that these federal agencies, the EPA in this case, but FCC is one of them, cannot make regulations. That's extra legislative. Yes. That it has to be the Congress that has to make these regulations. In the case of the EPA, it was pollution standards for states. But in the case of the FCC, what is it?
It just means that it's going to be much harder for the FCC to just make up rules. Like you have to go to Congress and get that.
Congress is so gridlocked. Well, that means nothing. Yeah. It's going to happen.
Well, here's the one I say about that is that there are things that go through that are bipartisan. It's just that you can't do all of what everybody wants. I mean, there's things that everyone agrees on and it just pops right through. So yeah, you have to go down the middle because
we don't hear about those much, do we?
No, because it doesn't get a lot of press, but there have been definitely things that have gotten votes from both sides. It's not like it's gridlocked. It's gridlocked. The problem is both sides are so radical at this point that if they don't get everything that they wanted, then Congress is gridlocked. but if they both compromise, it goes right through. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
But with the FTC earlier this year, or maybe late last year, they made an unbidden assertion that, hey, by the way, tech companies, if you think that you're going to be going just fine until Congress starts legislating you, realize that part of our hunting license, as approved by Congress, is to go after deceptive and unfair practices. And if we decide that you're telling people that you're maintaining privacy and yet you're selling their data on the open web, that is deceptive, that is unfair, and we don't have to have an act of Congress in order to try to get you to knock that stuff off. But as you've been saying, the fact that this is now, when you go all, if you manage to get it all the way to the Supreme Court, the gravity is going to flow towards, well, no, an agency does not have the right to do something that Congress has not specifically told them to do. So that's strike one. Strike two, as great as it has been for the past year to hear so many Democratic and Republican representatives talking about wanting to reel in big tech, reel in other big companies, break up large monopolies, we have seen that when the rubber meets the road, there hasn't been a lot of, oh, well, that's the, we don't want to spend the political capital on that when this is a midterm year, or we're not sure that we can actually get this through. We're not sure we can get a majority to get that through. We don't want to do the work to make that happen. And without a mandate from the Oval Office that this is really a priority for my administration, it's probably going to be worth the risk of just continuing to operate the way you've been operating and hope things work out okay.
Well, I mean, shaking the tree does have fruit come out of it. Like, you know, exactly. I think that they, you know, there's a lot of, the tech industry was put on, you know, not, I'm sorry, I'm a little jaded because I worked in this industry for a long time. And so the tech industry was warned, like, hey, you're not paying enough attention. Like, you know, so suddenly a whole bunch of people started spending a lot of money in Washington, D.C. and giving money to campaigns and, you know, taking people out and everything else, all the things that telecommunications organizations have gotten really good at.
Well, and it's not just the U.S. because the EU just passed yesterday, or actually today, the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act, which are significant restrictions on what big tech can do. I don't know how it's going to impact Apple, but I have to say Google, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, Amazon, they're all going to definitely have an impact here. And the fines are huge. DMA violations are 10% of annual global revenue up to. DSA breaches up to 6% of annual global.
It's weird they can make it annual when it's an EU thing. There's a whole bunch of really weird aspects.
You're global. It's global.
Yeah, including a lack of American response, which I find interesting.
Yeah, you know, we'll probably talk more about this tomorrow on Twig, and maybe we can get a lawyer on because it's complicated. The Digital Services Act bans targeted advertising aimed at children or based on sensitive data such as religion, gender, race, and political opinions. It also bans dark patterns. You know, that seems like that's okay.
There's a lot of good stuff in it. It's just like it's global. Like the fines are global instead of EU, which is weird. And also it's like on the face, it targets American companies because those are the big tech companies.
Right.
And you think America would have some sort of, you know, messaging around that. Yeah. They also updated their message sort of TLDR, they wanted to have all messaging services be interoperable, even if it meant they could be no longer encrypted. Great for them, right? Because they haven't liked encryption in a long time. And they updated it today to say, well, it's not just any app that wants it, but we still want a bunch of features to actually work together. And it remains to be seen how that'll be implemented in the real world.
That's the Digital Markets Act, which is probably the one that most impact Apple. Requires, as you said, message services to be interoperable. So Apple's messages would somehow have to be interoperable with WhatsApp. Provide business users access to their data.
No longer Andy Chat. Like if Andy said, I want to have Andy Chat work with everything, they wouldn't have to go and support that anymore.
Okay. Yeah. The other one that's going to be really have to do with the App Store, companies will not be allowed to favor their own services over rivals or prevent users from removing pre-installed software or apps. You know, that's going to hit the Android Google Play Store and the iOS App Store.
And also alternative payment methods are specifically spelled out there. There's a lot here that's specifically targeted at specific complaints. But on the other side of that, the GDPR, this huge sweeping privacy and security, personal security initiative that passed in the EU a few years ago has in practice for the past five, I think 2016 was it, in past 5 or 6 years. I mean, weasel's got a weasel. You know, the companies that need those technologies, that need those techniques, they found a way around it, or they found that enforcement was pretty lax. So that doesn't bode well for the decision inside Apple, inside Google, inside Facebook, saying do we make our lives much, much more difficult? Do we risk our profit centers? Do we risk our 5-year strategy? Or do we just wait and see how much we can get away with before we determine how much we actually have to do to comply with this stuff?
I will say that I work in, we build a lot of stuff that interacts with customers, and GDPR is the middle of every conversation.
Yeah,
so if it definitely has an impact. I don't know if it has an impact on Google and Facebook and Apple, but I can tell you that every major corporation that I work with wants to know exactly how we're managing information, and they mostly want to throw it away because it's just seen as a liability at this point. And so it's you know, they don't want to have, you know, we're like, hey, people are interested in this, they'll probably want to get more information about that at some point, and nobody wants it. It's like oh, there's a hot potato. Like, until they, you know, it's so much legal stuff now to do it. But anyway, so it's a really interesting puzzle, but definitely GDPR definitely has an impact. I don't know if it's a good impact or a bad impact, but everybody talks about it.
Well, and that's why you might wonder, why does Facebook have ads on TV saying we want to be regulated? Because and this is the whole point of regulatory capture. If you're big enough, you can weasel, as you said, right. Andy. You can weasel your way around. It's the mid-sized companies and the smaller companies that you're working with, Alex, that have to really worry about this.
When I say mid-sized, they're still Fortune 100.
They're still big. They're not Google, Apple, Facebook. They're not FANG.
Exactly.
You know?
They're not
competition
Fortune 10.
Regulation is sometimes so expensive, it dampers competition, which is...
Yeah, exactly. Thing. Which is why Facebook says, regulate us, please. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Please regulate
right here, please.
Yeah. The other thing that maybe to this point, Reuters reports that it doesn't look like there's a huge budget for enforcement on this. So there is some question about these two new regulations and how enforced they will be. I don't know if I would bet the bank on that, though. You never know, right? And as soon as they start fining some people, they're going to have more money than
all the budget.
Whoops. Mark Gurman says, I couldn't care less. The Apple Watch will feature temperature sensor. This is the era of diminishing returns. The new Apple Watch 8 will know if you have a fever.
And there'll be a big screen model.
Well, and 47-millimeter model, yeah.
In the world of COVID, that's not a...
Well, I've been wearing an Aura. No, that's a good thing. I've been wearing an Aura ring, though. It's done that for years and it graphs it.
Oh, I just ordered mine. Do you like it?
Yeah, I don't wear it all the time because I don't like wearing rings to bed. I even take off my wedding ring when I go to bed. But if you don't mind wearing a ring, it's great. It's not great for exercise. What it's best at is that temperature monitoring because it'll tell you if your temperature fluctuates. Also, heart rate variability because it's really good on your finger at measuring heart rate.
I think with all these things, I just find the data to be fascinating.
Posted hers this morning and she just didn't sleep.
Yeah. Sorry,
I find the data to be. I just find the data to be fascinating. Like I love that it gathers all that. I mean,
you know
again,
what I've been wearing lately?
More worried if it wasn't Apple, but I think that the gathering the data is a lot of fun.
I don't know if I've mentioned this on this show, but I've been wearing a continuous glucose monitor lately. It turns out you can just get these. there are companies that will for quantified self will athletes and so forth. A lot of athletes. I was talking to my friend who. Her college softball team all wore them because it gives you continuous feedback on glucose. That's a metric. You can really see how if they can figure out how that's going to work in an Apple Watch, you can really see we're headed in 10 years. You'll know you'll have some. I presume they'll figure out ways to measure, blood stuff.
Yeah, I have to admit, I did measure my glucose for a while, and that's why I really stopped eating bread.
Yes, you see it go through the roof.
That's really screwing me up.
But every bagel crashes takes its toll.
Oh my gosh, yeah, like I was like that definitely got out of my diet really quickly.
Oh my gosh,
when I realized.
Yeah,
I'll have little bits of it, but I'm like, oh, that's a.
It's my personality too, because if I know that I'm going to eat that bagel and then I'm going to see that in a graph. Later in the day.
Yeah, exactly. I deal with
that. I'm aware of that. Yeah, it's like, okay, there's a little cop on my shoulder, on my arm here.
Exactly. No, that's a very big deal. The ability, the bad side of this is when you're trying to get an appointment with your doctor every time that something on your watch says, hey, something is a little bit high, something is unusual for you. But the real power is when you start to, you're just aware of what these numbers are and you're aware of, gee, that time where I was just really logy all day long or that time where I really couldn't focus on anything if you just simply say, gee, that seems unusual, that I know what I feel like normally, I didn't feel normal, let me just take a look at this panoply of numbers and over time see if I can correlate with, oh wow, that was also for the past 2 or 3 days, like I haven't, my blood pressure has been like this, my body temperature has been like this, my blood glucose has been like this, I was unaware that you could do continuous glucose monitoring over the counter.
Like, well, it's not over the counter. They do write a prescription for you, but it's kind of like getting Viagra. I mean, there's just some guy, some doctor somewhere is writing the scripts out.
But it's the thing.
Glucose right here.
You put it on your arm. It does not hurt. You're kind of aware of it. Last 2 weeks. It's not cheap. Yeah. It's like $100 per, but... I don't know if you need to do it for long, but you do it for 1 month. I just feel like I'm not recommending this for everybody. I'm type 2 diabetic, so it is probably important for me to monitor this. But, in fact, I used to prick my finger, which is a lot better than doing that.
Yeah.
But it does give me a window into what this future holds. And it's exactly as you said, Alex, in genetics, they talk about matching the genotype to the phenotype. Once you understand what your genes do to your... your medical situation, you can start linking these together. I think this is going to revolutionize health, medicine, fitness.
Yeah.
But it's might be most a few of it years just, off. I mean, it's not.
Most of it gives me data that reinforces
what you already know.
Basically, yeah. Well, don't eat a lot of sugar.
Bagel.
Yeah. Eat mostly yeah. mostly fresh foods, mostly yeah. vegetables. Yeah. You know, like
we already know it.
It turns out like everything Michael yeah. Pollan said yeah. in Forks Over yeah. Knives is yep. pretty much the truth.
Eat food.
And now I have data that tells me that he was right.
Yeah. What is the quote? Eat food, mostly vegetables, not too much.
Something eat like real that. Food, I think. Mostly vegetables, not too much. Yeah, yeah exactly.
but that's why, like, one of the holy grails of fitness watches is a continuous blood glucose monitor, that monitoring that's non-invasive. And that, as soon as they crack that, as soon as they make it reliable,
that's going to be
a health revolution. Yeah. You talk about, I mean, it's great that you're telling me that, hey, you might be having a heart attack. You might want to, I'm going to call 911 for you. That's absolutely, and that's the dramatic stuff that makes the great commercials. But it's the people, it's the times when it will just simply say, by the way, here is what your blood glucose level has been doing today. And when you say, oh, that time where I just could not focus on anything was, what did I do just yeah. before 2:10 in the afternoon, that's the time that I ate half that bag of M&Ms because, quote, they were going, or they're about to go bad, unquote. Maybe I should not do that.
That's when the pizza drone arrived.
Yeah. Mexican cola, in fact, is no better than American cola at spiking your glucose.
And I think the thing is, as we get more of that data, and we've talked about this before, is that especially as it's anonymized and pushed back into the system, which Apple's one of the only companies that most people are going to trust enough to let that happen, is that it is, it's incredible. It's going to be able to get to a point where it goes, you know, your expected lifespan is 73 years or whatever, based on all the data that we have, or that, you know, we see some precursors. We see these precursors that are...
Lisa just told me that science says every hot dog I eat takes 32 minutes off my life.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a stat.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All I was going to say is that it's. But what's more important is not so much you're going to have a heart attack in 5 minutes.
No,
it's saying
long term.
We see precursors
yes.
that say that you may have a heart attack in the next year.
Yeah.
Based on what we see right now, and this data would be untrackable because it's lots of data over time that we could never get before.
Well, also for public health recommendations.
Exactly.
I mean, imagine the things we will know. It's going to be a total revolution. But the question is, can they... I mean, they're having a hard time making a non-invasive blood sugar measurement system.
Yeah. I mean, it works great in the lab, but you can't get it certified. Yeah. I mean, Apple had the tech, or everybody had the technology for temperature readings. It's the question of, is it even reading the temperature at your skin on a device that's pressed to your skin all the time? Here's how long it took for Apple to get it certified so that they can, hopefully get it certified this year. But Alex, I was going to say though that you often talk about like how Apple like maybe trying to become a bank, or maybe that'd be a good idea for it to become a bank, and now I finally see the synergy where, like, as the health technology gets much better and says, hey, this hot dog is going to take a year off your life, Apple is also like has a track of my finances, it will say at this point you will probably live until 82. Unfortunately, your retirement savings will go out at 77, so you know what, have that pizza. it's probably not going to be a good
it
5 years of your life anyway. Living on the street.
There is a holistic calculation you probably want to include some of those other. My mom, I got her, because she's 89, and if she falls, I want to, want her to be able to get help. I got her an Apple Watch. She loves it. I was very happy when I got there to see she was wearing it. She also said, and every once in a while I'll be sitting there, and the watch says, your heart rate is spiking and you're not moving, as it does. She calls her doctor, and the doctor says, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Because you're 89, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
that's exactly right. And this is part of the danger of these devices. They're, as any of us who have elderly relatives or have had elderly relatives know, there is a point at which, yes, this is the patient is 83, 84. Yes, you have this medical problem. However, the intervention for addressing this problem is probably going to cause greater health problems than just simply maybe switch from a longboard skateboard to an electric skateboard to put less stress in your heart.
Well, I brought her a bag of clam cakes in response. I said, "Mom, have more clam cakes."
Clam cakes, but everything.
I know that. I know if a hot dog takes 32 minutes off your life, this has got to take an hour off your life. But they are so good; it's worth it.
Oh God! Well, I mean, Leo, this is probably going to convince you not to come visit me, but I can walk. Half a mile that way for clam cakes and chowder, or a quarter mile that way for clam cakes and chowder. I'm in the irresistible orbit of two different gravity wells of clam cakes and chowder. So
the place we went in Providence is kind of a nouveau place, Dune Brothers, founded by chefs. Yep. The food was so good, and I've never had a better clam cake. Oh, okay, enough. People are going, clam cakes. What are they talking about? What are they?
Coffee.
Imagine a beignet only for seafood for mollusks.
Seafood beignet.
A mollusk beignet.
Without
they
the powdered
the shells
sugar.
Out. They so
do
it's not
take
as crunchy.
Yes, yeah. No powdered sugar. Apple TV makes San Diego Comic-Con debut with lineup of fan favorite critically acclaimed series. Severance, For All Mankind, Sea, Invasion, Foundation, and Mythic Quest. Yeah, when you look at it this way, Leo. You could see why... Go ahead.
I was going to say, they have an immersive Severance experience. Isn't that just inviting people to Apple Park?
Severance, in case you don't know, is is Ben Stiller's take on a dystopian work-life balance. It's a fantastic... At first, it was a little... Because it's kind of sensorily deprived. The first few episodes, it's like, I don't know. But by the end of it, and when it ends, so suddenly you're going, give me more. Give me more. Talk about Skinner boxes. So what is this? Is it a VR experience? What is this immersive Severance?
They just make you work. You just got a macro data. You got a macro data the whole time.
It's hysterical. We'll find out. Comic-Con. Here's July 21st.
Congratulations. For the next 20 minutes, you're going to be processing App Store submissions. Here's a big button marked deny and a tiny green button, if you can find it, on a green background.
They're going to cast members will be there. Executive producer and director Ben Stiller will be there. Creator Dan Erickson will be there. That sounds like fun. For All Mankind. This makes me... Rob McElhenney will be there with Mythic Quest. This makes me want to go.
Did anyone finish Foundation?
I'm no. Curious. It's interesting you said that. John did. He says he did. I did not. I keep trying to watch it.
I just got bored.
It was very disappointing.
Just so slow.
I don't remember the book. John says he liked it, but he likes anything like that. Oh, waffle party. Maybe that's what the Severance
is. It's a waffle party.
You get a waffle party.
You wear a Steve Jobs hat instead of a...
No spoilers, but a waffle party is a very important part of the work life.
I think this is all just an excuse for Tim Cook to finally come out with his Wolverine cosplay.
That would be great. That's so awesome.
He wants to finally be able to tax deduct it after 3 years.
I'm telling you.
Here's Zach Cherry having his waffle party in Severance all by himself. Wow. And congratulations, Steve Jobs, receiving the Medal of Honor, the highest civilian award in the United States. He is among 17 honorees. His award, of course, posthumous. I don't know. I've heard yet if Lorraine Powell Jobs will be going to the White House on July 7th to accept for him. I certainly hope so.
Yeah. It's interesting that the president every single administration gets to sort of make comments about what he thinks is great about America, what's great about his vision of the current, the past, and the future. And although a few people might think, oh well, Steve Jobs doesn't sound like a civil rights.
He's better
pioneer.
Than Rush Limbaugh. But, let me say that.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that there's an asterisk next to anybody who got anything awarded by Trump. But in the declaration, it's highlighted like not only was legitimately he led some very creative and very innovative companies, but also the contributions that he made to the economy, and that's part of what the portfolio of this award is all about.
I can't imagine anybody debating the merits of Steve Jobs getting the Medal of Honor. That's
absolutely
it's more of a finally moment for me.
Yeah, finally, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but when you look at the other nominees, there,
John
it would be
McCain,
the only
like Simone Biles, Megan Rapinoe, the soccer player, Senator Simpson, Denzel Washington. I mean, these are important. These are Gabby Giffords. These are great and appropriate recipients, but I think none more appropriate than Steve Jobs.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nice. There are some awards where you get them because you're really, really rich and you donated a lot of money to the right causes. And one part of your payment for that is not only that you got an exemption in your on your taxes for basically where you've been hiding your money, but also that, okay, you get to have this congressional whatever. But this is legit.
So yeah, if the only thing Steve Jobs had done is introduced the iPhone, that has totally transformed our society in the last 15 years. I mean, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't imagine any technology since the wheel or fire that has made such a difference in our day-to-day lives. And you might say, well, I'm an Android user, but believe me, that Android phone you're carrying is an exact copy of the iPhone.
Googling the sooner right now.
But not only that, if that were specifically what he was called out for, a lot of people would say, well, he didn't invent the iPhone. He was like, he basically funded it.
Does the iPhone exist without Steve?
But it's not only that, but again, under his leadership, Apple went from a brinking on the edge company to the most valuable private company in the world, mm-hmm. and it's an American company. And the commercial successes that they have had, the jobs they've created, the amount of money they put into the economy has been just enormous. And that's not a small thing. I think it would be very, very eyebrow raising if Elon Musk were given an award like this, because you'd have to ask, okay, you made yourself into the richest person in the world, and you created a platform so that people as rich as you could get selfies eating jelly beans in zero gravity. But how does that help the country? How does that help the progress of humanity? I mean, it's the most how does your name sit amongst this list of people that we're talking about? I mean, there are two or maybe even three where there are quotes about Dr. Martin Luther King about how good a person this person was. That's a lot to stand up to. Richard Trumka, the other posthumous one that caught my eye, Richard Trumka, who was president of the AFL-CIO. So that's a big call out to how important the labor movement is, at least to the eyes of the administration. So yeah, this is a really, really good award, and this is a good group of people to be with. There's nobody that when the picture is put on the wall of people's offices, there is nobody they're going to try to like crop out to say, yeah, but there was also that general who did all those war crimes that we're not talking about that came out 3 years later.
Yeah,
plus a nice little Pixar cherry on top.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not forget Pixar.
Yep. Again, consistent.
Yeah. And it's not, you don't get the honor because you're a nice guy. You might not have been the nicest guy in the world.
Nice you're people don't affect nice. Social change, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Nice people start the ball rolling, and it's the people who are saying, okay, you're not paying attention, so we're going to make things really freaking awkward until you listen to this issue that we need to address right here and right now.
And now the Renee Ritchie Pokemon Go segment. Pokemon Go creator Niantic cuts 8% of staff, cancels 4 projects. But I think Pokemon Go is still a go. In fact,
yes.
Now have Campfire Social AR app for Pokemon Go players. What have you gotten into the Campfire?
I haven't. I didn't believe that I needed an adjacent social experience to my Pokemon.
It's social
Go
enough. But it was always
I do wonder though.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I do wonder, like, there's this trend in Silicon Valley, and I don't know if this applies to Niantic or to Tesla or to which companies it does, but where they seem to overhire and then cull, like, 10%. And it seems like just, like, the worst form of stack ranking imaginable.
I'll say something in their defense. We had layoffs during COVID. When you're flush and everything's going well, there's a lot of positions you want to fill. And there are a lot of great people we had to let go because we could not afford to keep them. They're positions that you want filled when you have the money, but you don't. It's like painting your house. If you have the money, you paint the house.
Yeah.
But if you don't, you don't.
And they canceled games too, like the Transformers game.
Well, I think probably they learned their lesson with Harry Potter that not all AR games are equal.
Yeah. and also a lot of entertainment companies, all the streamers are contracting right now. They are figuring out what projects we're hopeful, but we can get away with canceling them.
It's just a different environment,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you know, it hurt me to let anybody go. It always hurts you, and it makes you. I have
some of
to be honest.
Cyclically, so you don't strike me as any like. But some of these companies do it like regularly. It's almost like a pattern.
They call it right sizing, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Then that's
yeah, like they overhire and then sort, and then overhire and then sort.
Maybe they do that. I wouldn't be surprised. I layoffs are so painful and so horrific that I never want to do them, and it makes you not want to hire more people, even though you might need them.
And there were a bunch of companies last week. It was really
and
painful.
The hard part is I fought laying people off, I mean, tooth and nail, you know, until I had to lay everybody off. You know, so
there is a sense to that. Yeah, it's good to be, you know, like practical and say,
if I had laid off half of them, I probably could have.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have had to lay them all off. You know, so the thing is, so I think that's the thing you have to, the hardest part with all layoffs or anything else is that one of the most expensive resources for any company is labor, you know, and so that's why you fight, you know, even small raises and all kinds of other things that math multiplied by 10,000 or 12,000 or whatever is really huge. Complicated, you know, and so are millions. And so it's so you just you know,
well,
all
it's
those
more than
changes.
The salary, it's benefits. I mean,
so it's,
you know, it's expensive and you need people. There's no company without the people. And you're right, Alex, that's part of the case. Thank God I have Lisa, because she's super smart in that. And that's it. You know, we have to cut off the arm to save the body. Sometimes, well,
and again, when you're growing, the biggest problem people have is they don't grow fast enough. You know, you don't have the people, and then you make mistakes, and things don't come out, and then you can't grow because you didn't have the resources that you needed. And so, under resourcing your growth is a huge issue. So most companies will throw people and resources at it. So that they can try to take advantage of the wave. And then when they get to the other side, well, some of it made it and some of it didn't. And then they have to scale down.
I'll be honest. Until I ran a company, I had no idea. I don't think know until you do
absolutely.
It. And then you know it's hard.
No, even, you know, even as small, I've never owned a company except for me with my one employee, myself, my beleaguered.
It's hard to lay yourself off, isn't it? I know.
Right. Yeah. But nonetheless, like I've been like my all my book projects, I've done like 10 to 12 books before that became a dumb thing to do. I know that there are people who are freelancers who are working for me to do certain editing work, to do certain prep work for me. And there are times where it's like, oh my God, this publisher is being such a bunch of blanks about this. And if I could possibly get out of finishing this book, because the fight is too much to be beyond just simply writing this book. And what stays my hand is, but there are people who are basically going to be getting $10,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 over the next 5 to 6 months. Based on the work that I'm giving them, and they probably made plans based on that, and so that's got to keep me eating dirt on certain things for a couple of months. I can't risk them canceling this project. I'm happy to walk away from this, but I'm not happy telling, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 people that, sorry, I knew that you're going to be paying your mortgage for the next year.
Oh, it hurts.
Not so much.
Yeah. And along those lines, I have an announcement to make, but we're going to do that right after this word from our sponsor. Boy, is that a terrible tease. Our show today brought to you by Cashfly. We have been happy Cashfly customers for more than a decade. Cashfly came to Twit's rescue in the early days when we could not figure out how to get our files to you guys. We were doing all sorts of things. The website wasn't big enough. I couldn't afford the bandwidth there. But then we tried BitTorrent. Remember that? And I was asking people to seed. And then we tried AOL. And fortunately, Matt Levine from Cashfly, the founder, came to us and said, I think we can help. And they have been helping ever since. Cashfly's amazing. We love them. And now they have some new stuff that I think you might be very interested in, including Cashfly's new ultra low latency video streaming, less than 1 second latency. You can go live in hours, not days. Ditch that unreliable WebRTC solution for their WebSocket live video workflow. And it's not even the best part. The best part, there's so many best parts. One of the best parts, you can stream to millions of users. It's scalable beyond your wildest dreams. You'll also be reaching your audience closer to where they are with 50 points of presence around the globe. Content is going to be closer to your customers, which is a lot better than a local CDN. They also have something they call Cachalite Storage Optimization System. And this I know about because we've been using this for a long time, kind of in a prototype version. Now they're making it available to customers. Take a load off your origin servers, reduce your S3 bills, reduce your bandwidth, increase your cache hit ratio to 100% CacheFly's Storage Optimization System. They also have fully managed CDN solutions if you need them, and I think you might. With their elite managed packages, you get VIP treatment, and I can vouch for that. 24/7 supports, response times in less than an hour. CacheFly's just the best. Ultra-low latency video streaming, lightning-fast gaming, faster downloads, zero lag, glitches or outages, mobile content optimization that delivers automatic and simple image optimization so your site loads faster on any device. Multiple CDNs for redundancy and failover. In fact, they're so reliable over the last 12 months, a 100% availability. 100%! 30% faster than other major CDNs, 10 times faster than traditional methods. They're on six continents, a 98% cache hit ratio. You can't do better. Trust me, and I know you can't do better than CacheFly. Best of all, with their 24/7, 365-day-a-year priority support, you know they're always there for you when you need them. They always have been for us. Just can't thank you enough, CacheFly. Learn more at CacheFly.com. That's CacheFly.com. Thank you, CacheFly. Alex Lindsay, pick of the week time.
I'm working on a new podcast. Not me. I'm not in it, but and it is on CacheFly.
Oh, nice. So
your timing is perfect.
Yay.
So about 6 months ago, a little over 6 months ago, we had Michael Krasny, who you probably are
love
familiar
Michael.
With.
Professor at San Francisco State and the host for a long time of KQED's morning interview show.
For every day, every weekday.
Yeah, I've been on the show. It's great. I love Michael. Yeah, he's how long? How many years did he do that? Yeah,
28 years.
Holy
28
cow.
Years. And before that, you know, interviewing people every day. And so he
Forum was such
he retired.
A good show. Yeah,
he retired from Forum, and a lot of us were like, well, we really want Michael back. really want Michael Krasny back. And so we for the last 6 months, you know, he and I would talk a little bit on and off. And then he was like, well, I don't know how to do this. And I was like, well, I can help.
so you might know a little bit about that.
A couple of us started kind of helping out. And so we've set up the Gray Matter podcast. It was really Gray Matter, like the gray areas to talk about and really thinking through things. And so we have the first episode is actually out today. If you go to graymatter.show, you can spell it either way and you should end up there. And we have Dr. Robert Wachter, who's really been in the middle of the COVID-19.
Oh, he's great.
Thing. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's a really good, really good our first episode. And what's funny with Michael Krasny is that the moment, you know, like he's like talking, you're talking, and then he just turns it on and it's immediately a show again. Like it's just the same show.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing that we're changing is, and we're going to open this up to more people. So you want to sign up on the website. We're going to start letting people actually in to ask questions. And so instead of doing the call-ins, we're using Mukana, you know, the Q&A system that I have here, and there's people listening on Zoom. So when we do the shows, we're doing them over Zoom, and there's a small group of people right now, a couple, you know, there's 50 or 60 people, but it'll get a little bit bigger. And we're going to invite people in to be part of that live audience that listens and during that record, you know, kind of puts that together. So if you're interested, you can sign up there, and we're gonna reach out to folks in a couple weeks. And we've got a couple great ones in the can that we've recorded that are gonna start coming out once a week. And you know, it's just really good conversations. He's so good.
Oh, he's lucky to have teamed up with you too, because you've got the perfect platform to do this.
That's really great. It's mostly office. It's all office hours folks right now, and they're gentle.
You can't help starting companies, can you, Alex? That's so funny.
I can't. Well, I'm not starting. I'm just helping out. I'm just helping out with this. Sure. I'm not starting anything. But I think that.
Shannon Cooper's producing it. That's awesome.
Yeah. So Shannon. Nice. Shannon. I think it's going to be a really exciting podcast, and it's just going to do exactly what Forum did, pretty much, except for that. Again, the shows are going to be. You're going to have the opportunity to watch the live recording. where you can ask questions and vote on questions and so on and so forth. And then the podcast will go out from there. So anyway, it's a different model, or where Michael is just kind of weaving the audience questions into the whole show. So it's works out really well. So anyway, it's a new way of doing it. We're going to see how it turns out.
Just launched today.
Yep.
Graymatter.show. By the way, this is just in. Thank you, chat room. According to an Easter egg in MKBHD's video. Whoops.
My worst nightmare.
Yeah, no kidding. Marquez, and you don't have to comment on this, Renee, because you probably have inside information. But Marquez briefly, and I've done this, briefly showed his calendar. Quick frame shows the calendar widget on his phone's home screen, and you can clearly see Apple MBA briefing, MacBook Air briefing, scheduled for this Thursday, July 7th, which you might assume means the MacBook Air will be available for order the following day. He's reviewing, by the way, an Android phone. So it's just a little slip. These things happen.
I would guess if he's having a briefing on Thursday, and you can tell I'm privy to nothing by the fact that I'm speculating openly about this. My guess would be that he's receiving product that day, if he were not Marquez Brownlee, if he were on a normal level of godliness, not the Marquez level of godliness, that would mean that he's getting it shortly, or has just received it. We'll have 1 week with it before it can go public.
So it might be the following Friday. Huh?
I would guess the pre-orders on Friday and embargo lifts on Wednesday. Or Tuesday.
That's probably Wednesday. Your pick of the week, Andrew Inatko.
We've already talked about Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud, so another endorsement for that. Because even if you're not trying to get into comics, it really is a brilliant book about how storytelling work, how narrative works, how, again, avatars, how characters, how perception, how understanding works.
The Kindle version; get the paperback. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. especially this, because it is a comic book and it's brilliant. A lot of it is basically he's taking advantage of the fact that he is using that own narrative device to actually show off how this narrative device works.
It's kind of amazing, really. It's a great book.
It really is wonderful. Yeah. I've owned a copy. It's one of those books that I keep like having to buy again because I keep pulling it off a shelf and giving it to somebody as a way of saying that I'm not. You say that you're going to go buy it, but I'm going to send you home with this because it's such a good book.
Yeah.
Other thing is I enjoyed our conversation about what got us into computing, vintage computing. It reminded me of one of these projects to basically create a modern version of a Commodore 64, meaning with you control everything, you understand everything, all the chips that are on the board are commonly available. It's not proprietary. There's a really cool project trying to create a computer called the Commander X16, which isn't necessarily a clone of the Commodore 64, but basically it's that in principle. And they've made a lot of progress in building this board and this computer. I think it's stalled a little bit because, to their credit, they seem to be determined not to put anybody into bankruptcy or to make anybody lose any money in developing this. So that includes people pre-ordering for a computer that doesn't exist and losing their money, or the people who are developing this, like saying, "Well, we need to put in $10,000 order to secure the manufacturing of this thing without knowing if anybody's going to buy it." So the hardware is stalled, but they've already put together the kernel is correct, the version of BASIC is correct, all these programming guides are correct, and so they have an emulator of the machine that they hope to build. So if you do want to get a taste of what it was like in the 80s to be in the computer lab writing BASIC, or in the 80s or 90s essentially writing simple code, download the emulator. It's available for really every platform, including the Mac. There's also a lot of it's been around for about a year or a year and a half now, which means a lot of people have now uploaded their own BASIC programs or simpler language programs. So it's fun. I usually don't like nostalgia because it's I would rather people appreciate a Commodore 64 for what it is and what they like about it than remember the 80s, remember snap bracelets, remember jelly shoes, and the computer on your desktop was a Commodore 64. It's like, no, let's not relive the 80s. Let's just enjoy this thing that we so it's a fun thing to do, and it'll be free, and you don't have to even spend $10 for a Raspberry Pi to make this sort of stuff happen.
Although I have to say, if you can get a Raspberry Pi, and I know they've been very hard to get, That's probably the right computer to get for a 12-year-old these days, right?
I would say so, because I wouldn't necessarily want a 12-year-old to learn BASIC. This is where I disagree with some of the print. There's a fact file that explains like the nature of the project, and one of them is I think that every kid should learn how to program on a system like this. Like, no, if I had a kid, I would want them to learn modern programming techniques. I would want them to learn how to use APIs. I would want them to learn how to use Stackflow, how to use JScript, how to use all these other things, because that's how apps are made. That's the root of nostalgia, saying, oh, it was so great in the 80s to program this way. But believe me, absolutely believe me, if I had the ability to create a menu system by simply saying, oh, by the way, just call this API, just use this include file and then call this API, I would have used the hell out of that, instead of having to say, okay, well, clearly I can't just use peaks and pokes to create this, so I'm going to have to build this menu system in assembler, which is going to take me a long time. But
I don't know when these Raspberry Pis will be back in stock. I'm at Adafruit. They're all out of stock, including the Pi Zero. And it's just, boy, I hope they can make some more. This is where the supply chain really hurts, because this is exactly the right thing to get a smart 12-year-old. And just give it to them and say, go. You know,
not only for that, but because all they have to do is Google, how do I do this? How do I turn on a light? How do I control an LCD?
Yeah.
You Google that question and you will find an embarrassment of tutorials. Just it's all you got to do is just be ready to spend a lot of money on Adafruit. I really think the Raspberry Pi is the computer equivalent.
It's only $30, but
give away the Razer charge for the Blaze, because you mean that all, if I want to have like a window like LED panel that has, all I have to do is buy this header for the, wow, how much is that? Only $90? Sure.
They actually, I'm going to amend myself, for about $100 you get the kit that has a screen, a keyboard. You want to get at least enough so that the kid can start. That'd be about $100. The touchscreen's $15, that kind of thing.
But controlling servos is amazing.
And then the GPIO bus, and you could just do Oh my God, it's incredible.
No question.
It's incredible. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I included those. This is the Geeker, I believe.
Geeker One.
Yeah, he's got a Mandarin channel, which is much, he posts much more in there. He's got an English channel that he's started. He hasn't posted that much in it yet. But
if you can you put on English closed captions, and then
I'm not sure. I don't know if he offers them or not, but you can look at like the English. He does the Snapdragon 8 series, Generation 1, Gen 1.
Yeah, so it does have auto translation into English. I don't know how good it is, but you do want to hear his voice, right? Because
he's so good.
He's got a great style to
him. And if you look at the title of the next video, the English video, I mean, he doesn't hold back. There's no artifice in these reviews.
Is he in mainland China?
I believe so, yeah. I think he's in Shenzhen, but I'm not positive.
Wow.
He's
obviously under the radar. Or is smart enough.
Well, they just have so much access. Like, they have so much access.
Right.
They don't, like, the companies don't really do anything for them. So they just give their straightforward, honest opinions. And they actually know how this stuff works. They're super smart. It's fantastic.
Neat.
It's like a whole new culture. Yeah. Yeah. Really, really happy with them.
Geekerwan. And this is the English language version.
Yes. And you can see by his title, he has very little. Very, very little hesitation.
I won't say it out loud, but it's a good
title.
He's not fond
with the overall thermals of that chipset.
Now, here comes...
He's not necessarily concerned with maintaining a good relationship with the PR or apparatus behind...
That's what you need.
Thank God bless.
Isn't it sad that we have to go to one of the most repressive countries in the world, where free speech is so constrained,
free from market oppression.
To be free from commercial pressure? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now
Qualcomm sent me this big van trailer to stay in for 2 days. Like, aren't they stupid to think that I would be impressed with this? What does this have to do with super processors? Oh, look, there's a cake with my face on it. Like I care.
Andy, maybe you should start a channel.
Yeah. You'd be too mean. I'm not here to roast other YouTubers. And not until I show the sort of work, dedication, and consistency that even like the ones that
you could
I would
be the
make
Uncle
fun
Roger
of, like,
of tech.
Yeah, exactly.
We try to be nice but honest. But I have to say, This is a sad moment on the show because we are going to take a little blow to the quality of the show because our dear friend Renee Ritchie, this is his last pick of the week and his last visit on a regular basis. And I think we want to keep the door open that you might come back from time to time on
Yes.
Break Weekly.
Yes, I would love that.
And details on what's going on for Renee to follow.
To follow, yes. I can't say anything yet.
Yeah. But we are
excited.
Renee, you have been... when did you start on Mac Break Weekly?
Oh, gosh. 2011? 2012? I'm not sure.
it feels like you've always been here.
Because I've been always watching. That's why I feel like I've never...
And without... You are our debunker-in-chief. You are the guy who has the inside knowledge. Your honesty, your integrity, the quality of your content, and just the wonderful, genial nature of your delivery makes you irreplaceable, totally irreplaceable.
I'm not crying, I have allergies.
It is a great loss to the show, and I'm sorry to lose you. I'm going to go. I think I can do a search.
I'm going to miss this terribly.
Search for your name here, Renee Ritchie, and find out when you... first
does the internet go back that long?
I think, though, that what we do is when we say appearances,
real player to pay those to
view
play those
appearances.
Videos.
I think we can they sort them chronologically. I'm thinking, so that's the most recent. Let's go to 35 pages of appearances.
Oh wow!
And there's quite a few shows per appearance. Say again, 2013. Although I see you on the show. Here, June 26th, 2012. So, interestingly, it's been almost exactly 10 years since it's your first appearance on the show.
It feels like a minute, Leo. Like, time really does fly.
It's a fast decade, and I am just so sad to be losing you, but I'm sure it will be a happy occasion when we find out where you're going, unless it's like you're moving to Ecuador to raise llamas.
No.
Okay.
No, Equatorial New Guinea. No.
Okay,
I can't take the climate.
Okay, I hope that's not the case.
He's going. He's going to be vacationing in Patagonia, like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
He's
the new Minchi Kuo. It's like, if you're considering getting into Macintosh.
All his shows will be in Chinese from now on.
Suddenly, we're going to see pictures of a bird's nest.
We don't know. It's a mystery. We do know who we're replacing him with, but I'm going to keep that mystery for next Tuesday when that person will join our panel. It is not an easy thing.
Get the bingo cards out, kids.
It is not an easy thing to do to replace Renee. In fact, we're not attempting to replace Renee, but there is an empty seat, so we'll find somebody to.
Alex can CGI me. Don't even know that I'm gone. I mean, he's got the technology for years already. I'm not even sure he shows up anymore.
I haven't been here for 5 years.
Yeah, Alex hasn't been here in 3 years.
This is just an AI rendering.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
There's a new Doctor Who.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Not the same. You can't replace it. Someone will reinvent the character of person in the leftmost seat and make it their own, I'm sure.
So,
Junior.
Can I ask you what's going to happen to youtube.com/Renee Ritchie? Is that...
It's continuing. I'm going to keep the YouTube channel going. I was previously thinking of changing it a little bit. As you've heard me say before, I'm kind of like burned out on the leak culture, and I've gotten burned out on the benchmark gotcha, you know, product release schedule. So I was already thinking about changing it. I'm probably not going to have the time to do like 4 videos a week anymore. I'm definitely going to try to at least do 1 video, maybe a live stream every week. And I want to cover just bigger tech issues. I think that's going to be my next big YouTube attempt. Same channel,
Pokemon,
but just
Twitch channel.
Bigger stories.
And you did say that we can from time to time bring you back, and I hope that's the case.
I very much hope so.
Okay.
Yes.
Because it's really going to leave a hole in the show and in my heart.
Thank you.
We're going to miss you.
Same.
Thank you, Renee, for 10 years of
thank you so much.
Just excellent contributions to the channel. Yeah. Alex Lindsay is at officehours.global. And is here in spirit as a robot. I don't know how he has time to do all that. You can also find him at 090.media. What's coming up on officehours.global?
Oh, I mean, it's always something. We're getting ready for. Yeah, we're getting ready for more coverage. So we've been doing coverage of a variety of different shows, and so we'll be talking about that a little bit. As we move forward. And yeah, we're just, you know, we're, there's a lot. Today we just did what we call ruthless reviews, which are really fun. You get to watch us like pick at each other.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Check out your black levels. And I don't, that little, that blue over there, I'm not sure if I would use. And there's like lots of like, if you want to see people really get particular about framing, you know, and how it's set up, we really push it pretty hard because we're getting ready to move office hours to, we're just in the process over the summer of moving it to 4K HDR 5.1.
Oh,
so God. You know, just as a yeah. So,
ooh,
so
anyway, I want to see this one. Focus on working in the White House. Somebody I think has some inside info on that one.
Yeah, it's a good point. I got a couple photos laying around. There's Frederick Van Johnson.
I want to see that one.
Frederick Van Johnson is
in the Oval. Is he in the Oval?
No, in that case, he's actually in. There's sharp, I have pictures of him in the Oval, but no, not in Oval, but in the Roosevelt Room. But the funny thing is that so for when we were doing work in the White House, which I couldn't talk about while I was here.
I know.
You know, obviously we did it with the Obama administration. And the funny thing is that Frederick happens to be the same height, roughly a similar complexion, and can really answer political questions really well. We called him our FOPO. He's like, he's the FOPO. And so I talk a little bit about some of those things, in that episode. It was a lot of fun. So
I think after 10 years, I can say a couple of things. I think it's safe now. There's the Roosevelt Room, and there's your setup. Look at this. This is wonderful. I want to see this.
That's in the EEOB. Yeah.
Oh, that's in the executive EEOB. Building. Okay.
Yeah, very cool. But I talked a little bit about what it takes to do that. So.
Wow. Really cool. Andy Nocco, GBH. When?
Friday at 12:45 at the Boston Public Library studio. I intend fully to be there unless I miss my early train, in which case I will be here just as much as I am right now.
And you're not, neither of you are quitting anytime soon, right? You're going to stay here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Believe me, I need this excuse to be awake as early as 2 p.m. on a Tuesday.
You aren't always, but I'm not going to bring that up. Renee Ritchie.
But honestly, how much sharper and more well-informed was I after I had a good 18 hours of sleep at one time?
Little nap does not hurt. Does not hurt. Alex Lindsay's Ask Me Anything is coming up July 14th in our club.
Looking forward to it.
I can't wait. That's one of many things we do in the club. Club Twit is $7 a month, gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows, gets you access to the Club Twit Discord, which is always a wonderful community full of great times. And maybe we can get Renee Ritchie to stop by once in a while in the Club Twitter.
Oh, I'll be checking in.
Yeah, that would be nice. Also, the Twit Plus feed with stuff you don't see on the shows for $7 a month. And soon, we'll be announcing the purchase of the Superman building. So that's going to be a big...
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be...
Get in now.
Get in now. twit.tv/clubtwit. Again, Renee, you will be sorely missed.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're the greatest. And I've been meaning to come up to Montreal. Now I have to, just to get my fix, my Renee Ritchie fix.
Yes. Yeah. Yay. We will hit all the best spots, Leo. It'll be
God
a blast.
God bless, Renee. And Godspeed. I know you're doing something you really want to do. And
thank you so
details,
much.
Details, I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it's good.
I'll let you know as soon as I can.
Details to emerge later.
Our loss is the mixed martial arts squared circles game.
Well, I sent him a note, which he did not deny, saying, I think Prime Minister Trudeau is going to really appreciate having somebody who knows tech at his right hand. But you didn't say anything. So I'm thinking maybe
when I pop up on Windows Weekly and everybody's freaking out.
That would be hysterical. We'll see you on the cruise.
Here's all I say. I don't think Conor McGregor knows what's coming.
Oh my God. Yeah. MMA.
Nice.
Baby.
Yeah.
We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, soon to be Renee-less, right around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us live at live.twit.tv. There's also a live audio stream there. Chat with us live at irc.twit.tv, or if you're a member of the club in the Club Twit Discord. You can get all the shows after the fact on the website, twit.tv/MBW, or on the YouTube channel dedicated to Mac Break Weekly, or, and I think this is probably the best and easiest thing to do, subscribe in your favorite podcast player. And that way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. We want to welcome John Ashley, our new technical director. He's been editing the show for some time. We're putting him up on the big board, which means John, Jammer B, gets to sit in the producer's seat.
He gets to relax a little bit.
Glaring at me.
I think Mr. Ashley's had a little bit of live experience.
John's had a live experience? I don't know what you're talking about, Alex.
Anyway, so as they say, one door opens, another door closes, yeah. Or is it the other way around? But anyway, welcome, John. It's great to have you. John's been here with us for a long time, but now I think now
and
that
before that he was with me.
So I know. Really? We stole him.
Yeah. So I used to work for Pixel Corps. Yeah.
We have a number of former Pixel Corgers in our ranks. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon.
At least I hope so.
Meanwhile, back to work because break time is over. So long.
If you are looking for a midweek update on the week's tech news, I got to tell you, you got to check out Tech News Weekly. See, it's all kind of built in there with the title. You get to learn about the news in tech that matters. Every Thursday, Jason Howell and I talk to the people making and breaking the tech news, get their insights and their interesting stories. It's a great show to check out. twit.tv/TNW.